here's two guys who can handle the truth.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
But we can. Xavier Will. Scott Goble. RX Muscle Australia proudly presents Aussie Muscle Radio. Yeah!
Welcome to another episode of Aussie Muscle Radio. I'm Xavier Wills, your host, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and compatriot in crime, Scott Goble. The 22nd of April 2014. Scotty, and how are we doing this week?
Mate, we're doing well. Training's good. I'm over my little sickness which I had last week when we recorded, and busy as always.
Did you find out what it was? What was making you sick?
No, I just had some little gastro bug or some food poisoning or something like that. I don't know, but it worked its way through me. I did drop 9 kilos in 2.5 days.
Jesus. So you ate nothing, man?
Nothing that remained inside me for any period of time.
That's exactly what I was about to say. So didn't sound like fun, but this is going to be the official 2014 Arnold Classic Brazil preview show. So we're going to be talking about all the names doing that and... who's kind of the front runners, and we're going to predict who, you know, obviously is going to win, and we're going to do probably like a top six or something like that. So, it's going to be a big show, Scotty, and we've got Aaron Pilates on later in the show, as well as Matt Legg as well. We've got another 2 minute with a scientist segment. We've got some actually really good ones, Scotty, so we recorded a few the other day, and they're going to be put on the next few episodes of Aussie Muscle Radio.
Excellent. I always look forward to that segment.
Yeah, and Matt's a genius. I was like... Some of the stuff he's talking about, because we chatted for about half an hour before we actually started recording, and some of the stuff he was talking about, I was like, let's save it for the show, Matt. Let's save this. Come on. So, we've got some really good segments there. But let's get into it. Let's preview the 2014 Arnold Classic Brazil. This is kind of a show that's, in a lot of people's minds, there's no one-out favorite bodybuilder. There's a lot of names that are up there. There's a lot of actually big names that aren't even kind of really been talked about. One of those, we'll start off here. One of those is Ben Pakulski, who's doing the show. He hasn't really been talked about, and it might be based off his appearance at the Arnold Classic Columbus, where he wasn't at his best, and he placed outside the top five. Scotty, do you think this is a guy that's kind of being overlooked a bit too much?
Yeah, probably, because he was second in the Arnold last year in Columbus, and then came out here in third place the Aussie Pro Show. So, yeah, he's a high-caliber competitor when he's on, but it was a little concerning. I was used to seeing Ben always rocking up in shape and always improving, and then he seemed to go backwards this year's show in Columbus. So I've kind of lowered my expectations, but he is still a massive guy that could pretty much win every shot from the front. It's just that his back is so deficient, it seems, that I think it's going to prevent him from sort of getting up there in the winner's circle. But he's definitely a contender. He is worth talking about.
Yeah, definitely. And I think he has been overlooked a little bit. And if he brings something like the look he brought last year to the Arnold Classic Columbus, I think he'll definitely have a chance and definitely be knocking on that kind of top three type placing. But we'll start at the top of the list from there, and we'll talk about Beto Abspor. Now, he's a guy that, this is actually going to be, I think, as far as I know, his last open show before he switches up to the 212. Do you think he has any chance of kind of, you know, making a top five or anything here?
No chance of top five. He's good in the smaller open shows because he's just so thick, and he'll be in shape that, you know, he gets a look, but he's got a bit of an odd shape to him and, you know, not a great flow. And, there's too many legit open size competitors for him to go up against in this show. So no, I don't see him top five.
Yep. Now the next two names on the list are big ones, I think, in this show, and they're going to be right up there. And the first one's Lionel Blakey. Now Lionel Blakey is coming off a year where he had, you know, a few up and down placings. He kind of he seemed to improve as the year went on, and then I think it was after the Olympia he did some shows, and he almost packed it in. Like he started to come in really off of those shows. From memory, but now he's working with Dennis James. Do you think he's going to be able to from pictures I've seen a week out and 2 weeks out and stuff like that, he's looking harder than he has before. His waist is looking absolutely tiny. Do you think this is his time to shine? Do you think it's going to be his year where he does actually break out?
I'd love it if it was, because he's such an amazing physique. I don't know. You know, he did improve fairly steadily under DJ last year until it all went to crap in the post-Olympia shows. So, look, if he's knuckled down and they figured it all out, yeah, absolutely, he could win the show comfortably, you know? Like, he could beat Bonac and John De La Rosa and Juan and all these other real high-caliber competitors just because of his amazing genetics. But, you know, we've yet to see him in that sort of condition. He wasn't far off at the Olympia. I'd love it, yeah. I'd love it if it was, but, you know, you would never put your money on Bjerke rocking up in great shape.
Yeah, exactly. Even with the pictures we have seen, I'm still very skeptical that he's going to be absolutely, you know, razor sharp or anything. I think Gally and I actually talked about this at the end of the show, and Gally was saying he's looking really hard or whatever, but I reckon he's just looking better than he has before. So it'd be hard to say if that's good enough for a win here. And William Bonac, he's the next name on the list, and he's my favorite going into the show, and I think he should be the favourite based off a very, very, very impressive second place finish at the Australian Pro, where some people even said, you know, he could have beaten Sean Roden, or he's right there with Sean Roden. Do you think Bonac's got to beat?
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to put him in first place. I don't think it's a lock by any means, because I think there's some guys with maybe a better structure in the show, like Bjerke, and I might even categorise Juan Morel as one of those. So, but, yeah, exactly for the same reason you are, on the basis of his Australian Open showing. We know he's going to be hard. We know he's thick. We know his proportions. He can present himself. So, yeah, he's my favourite going in.
Yeah. Now, it looks like Bonac's almost a guarantee to be in very good shape, or at least good shape. I think that kind of almost benefits a guy like John De La Rosa in this lineup, and maybe even a Bauta Abaspor as well. Where they might even possibly get... John De La Rosa may get some comparisons with Bonac. I don't think John is at the level that Bonac's at in terms of just that crazy full hardness and muscularity based off his performance 2 weeks ago. But, I mean, you know, do you think he is good enough if a few of these guys to slip up slightly to be compared with a Bonac and possibly get a top three?
Yeah, I could see him sneaking in the top three. I mean, he was good at the Orlando, and he's going to be a little bit better. I think he's definitely going to be in condition. He's really does have a very pleasing shape. So, yeah, it's just a case of will these bigger guys or thicker guys proportionately slip up ever so slightly. I think he's comparable to Bonac. I don't think he's just got the overall density that Bonac has. Across the board, you know, through the back, through the chest, as good as De La Rosa's legs are, I don't think they're up to Bonac's standard. So I think it's going to be hard for him to beat him, but anyone else that slips up, I think John De La Rosa can beat them all.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and I think, you know, we could see him as high as second, but I don't see him being any higher than that. Definitely, I can't see him winning the show just based on, you know. But it is one of those ones that's a possibility, and it almost works into the hands as well of another guy, Mike Kefalonis, the Aussie Greek. He's going to be in condition, and he's going to be around their height, and he's going to be comparable. Maybe not in terms of, you know, aesthetically speaking and structure and stuff, but he's going to be comparable if he outs conditions them.
Yeah, he is. I don't know. Like, I mean, hopefully he's learned how to present his physique a little bit better as well. But, I don't know. I like Mike Kef. He's such a nice guy, and he's such a hard worker, and does so many shows. But I don't know. I just see him slightly fading away. I think the shock value of his physique was the conditioning that he brought. And now I think if he's not absolutely 100% razor sharp, that the judges sort of overlook him. They sort of think, he's not his best, and they pass him by. So I think he's, a little bit much a victim of his own high standards he set in that regard, and he could just fade away into the background.
Yeah, but I'm hoping they you know, that he does come in really good condition, and the condition he's come in before, and he does get some sort of a look in here. If he's comparable, maybe even with a John De La Rosa or someone like that, that'd be absolutely awesome to see. Marius Donne, wherever you pronounce it, he's in this lineup. I don't think he was last week, but obviously, you know, based off how he looked and competed at the last show, where he's probably slightly overlooked, he's in this lineup. do you see him possibly doing any damage and kind of almost... I can see him placing him in about the same place in a much tougher lineup here, you know, if he does get that kind of look in.
Yeah, well, what, he slipped right down, didn't he? Wasn't he around 8th or 9th?
Yeah, I think, I'm pretty sure it was 8th, yeah.
Yeah, look, I thought he did get ripped off a little bit there. So I could imagine him, yeah, mate, yeah, top five's pushing it. It is a really deep lineup. But yeah, I agree. I think he's going to be middle of the pack guy. A very, very pleasing shape. He's going to be in great condition. He just is missing some sort of wow factor to his physique.
Yeah. And this, like you said, this lineup is very deep. There's only one name, but I have no idea who it is. It's a local Brazilian, so
yeah,
I don't know who that is.
Pictures of him online. He's coming last. He's an absolute lock for last place.
But outside of that, I mean, the outside guys, the guys that are going to be placing him, you know, probably predicted to place near the bottom, rather, I should say, is like Martin Kjellstrom, Kefalianos, maybe Robert Piotrkowicz, Fred Smalls. I mean, that's Marius Doan. I mean, they're the ones that are probably going to be maybe from 10 to 15 because it's a lineup of 15. But, I mean, that's still obviously no guarantee because you've got guys like Tony Freeman, Ed Nunn, who are going to be somewhere around there as well. So it's going to be interesting. Outside of that, I mean, all these guys, this is about, you know, 8 guys or whatever that are going to be right up there. But next name on the list is Tony Freeman. I mean, do you see Tony Freeman rekindling any of his previous form, or do you think he's just too far gone now?
Yeah, too far gone. I think I don't see how he can beat Marius Stoner, to be honest. So I think those two physiques are pretty similar, and I think Marius will be in slightly better condition. At his prime, Tony would have absolutely wiped the floor with him, but you know, he's just... Yeah, he's just lost a little bit of conditioning. His legs are starting to fade. I think his back might be starting to fade. Yeah, I think Tony's just hanging on and keeping his name out there, maybe for some other marketing reasons. But I don't think he's going to be in the prize money too much anymore.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I kind of almost disagree with that a little bit as far as Marius Doan. I think Tony will beat Marius, but that's granted that Tony at least brings what he brought the last time to the stage, which, you know, wasn't impressive for Tony, but he still has some sort of conditioning there, and he's still obviously got, you know, quite a bit of muscle. But yeah, like you said, his legs are faded, his back's faded a little bit. But, you know, he's a bit taller than Marius, so maybe that will get him over the line, but we'll have to wait and see. Mentioned before, Martin Kjellstrom's in the lineup. Do you think this guy, there always seems to be something a little bit wrong when he's on stage? I don't know if it's his... You know, maybe sometimes he might be a little bit bloated. Sometimes he's just not quite conditioned enough. Sometimes he's conditioned but a little bit flat. He never seems to nail it right on point from where I sit anyway. Do you think, you know, he could have a shock show somewhere down the track, whether it's this show or another show, where he kind of does, you know, put it all together?
He's got some points on the board from the Tijuana, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. I don't know.
Second to Dexter.
Yeah.
But he's just not pretty at all. It's just an extremely thick midsection, and I don't think he can really get it down at this point. So he's enormous, so I think he'd look pretty huge standing in any lineup, but it just is not a well-put-together physique, so I don't see him up amongst the genetic elite in this show.
Yeah. When he competed in Australia, I thought that was actually one of his better looks. So I can't remember what year that was, or if he did multiple years here, but it was one of the ones in Melbourne. And yeah, I thought he brought it quite a good look there. And when he first comes out, you think, shit, this guy's really big. But then you can kind of pick him apart as he poses, I think. So he's got that shock factor, but as he poses, you can kind of start to pick him apart a little bit. But Steve Kuklo and Juan Morel, they're kind of two guys that there's always a bit of a rivalry there, because Steve beat Juan to win his pro card, and then Juan obviously went and got his at the North Americans, which is a bit lesser of a show than I think it was the USA's where Steve won his. So they've always had a bit of a rivalry. They've both done the New York Pro, where Steve placed, I think, one spot ahead of Juan, not last year, the year before. And it seems like there's all, like, in my mind, there's a rivalry there anyway, because they're as close as amateurs, and Steve kind of had it over Juan there. Who do you think's going to get it this time?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think they'll be close again. For some reason, I think Juan. I don't know why. I think it's just because Juan's always in really good condition, and He's always improving, and he looks as big and freaky as ever in his progress pics leading up to the show, whereas Steve is sort of always just kind of looks the same. But Steve's a young guy, and he's got the potential to improve a lot as well. So I don't know. I think it'll be close, but I'm leaning towards one placing a bit higher.
Yeah, I'm kind of umming and ahhing about this one because I remember Chris Cicero saying he heard Juan was behind with his prep or something like that. This was a few weeks back. And then it kind of just, when you hear that from someone that's quite in the industry, you kind of pay attention to it. But yeah, I have seen a picture of Juan and he looked decent. So it's hard to say. I don't know where I stand on that one because, I'm not convinced that Steve can bring his condition in yet. So I kind of want to, I'll need to see it a few more times from Steve before I'm convinced he knows how to bring his conditioning in really well. So, but obviously, his conditioning last year was good enough to win a pro show over Issa Obaid or Essie Obiad, and he's crazy conditioned. So maybe he doesn't need it. And in person, he's a bit more impressive. But going down the list a little bit more, Ed Nunn. I don't think he's going to be a factor in this show. Do you see him kind of bringing in something where he can be, Scotty?
No, unfortunately not for Ed. He sort of always gets overlooked. He just doesn't quite have the thickness through the torso. And again, he just doesn't have enough impact, I guess, it doesn't give the judges enough reason to place him over some of the other guys. So, even if he's in great condition, I can't see him placing higher than, middle of the pack.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Rob Piotrkowicz, he's always in condition. He might knock off some guys just based on his conditioning and stuff, but I don't see him placing higher. He just doesn't have the structure for it. And Fred Smalls is the last competitor on the list. Do you see Fred possibly being a factor? Obviously he placed behind John De La Rosa at the last show. Do you see him possibly able to redeem himself and, push for a top five?
Top five. Let's see. I'm going to have Bonac, De La Rosa, Juan, Kuklo. Who else would I have in that fifth place spot? Maybe Bieke. Yeah, I don't see Fred Smalls beating those guys. So, no, not quite top five. Sixth, seventh, maybe.
Yeah, I reckon he'll be somewhere around 8th, 9th, somewhere like that, I reckon, if I had to predict it. But Scotty, let's do a top six. Do you want me to reel off mine first, or?
Let me go first, because that way it doesn't look like I'm copying you.
All right, sounds good.
All right, so in first place, I'll go with William Bonac. In second place, I'm going to go Juan Morel. Third place, I'll go Steve Kuklo. Fourth place, I'll go John De La Rosa. Fifth place, I'll go Lionel Bieke. I'm sure I've missed someone now, but...
Ben Pekulski. Have you said him?
No, but he sounds perfect for sixth place.
All right, excellent. All right, I'll do mine. I thought you'd be a little bit closer to mine. I'm just going to say William Bonac in first. I'm going to say Lionel Bieke in second. I'll say Ben Pekulski in third. Steve Kuklo in fourth. John De La Rosa in fifth and Juan Merrill in sixth. I'm just betting that Steve Kuklo will come in all right condition. It will just be good enough for that fourth. And I think Ben's going to bring maybe something better than he brought in Columbus. So I'm just basing off that. And I think Juan, obviously, he makes massive improvements every year. So I think he's going to be good as well. So it's going to be very interesting, Scotty. On that note, we are going to head to a break and we'll be back in a few minutes for your Ask Scotty segment and Bodybuilding Yes or No.
International Protein is an Australian company owned by qualified food scientist, IFBB Pro, and three-time world champion Christine Enville. At International Protein, we don't believe in selling overhyped or fad products, so you can be assured that if a product has our name on it, the formulation has been developed based on the latest nutritional research in the field of strength and conditioning performance. At the core of International Protein, there are five key principles: taste, quality, affordability, results, and flexibility. Christine Enville is proud to share her successful nutritional formulations with people who are serious about their body, their sport, and their performance, so they too can reach their ultimate goals. Look for International Protein in all good health food and supplement stores. paying inflated prices for products which are full of hype and fillers? At Bulk Nutrients, you get the purest products available direct from our factory. There are no middlemen, contractors, distributors, or shopfronts. Bulk Nutrients stocks protein, carbs, aminos, pre-workout recovery, encapsulated products, fat burners, test boosters, and so much more. Bulk Nutrients is 100% Australian-owned and operated, and will give you higher quality and better prices guaranteed. So visit bulknutrients.com.au. It's your one-stop shop. Mass Nutrition is Australia's premier sports supplement provider, with over 13 stores Australia-wide, stocking everything from protein powders and pre-workout mixes to weightlifting accessories and gym apparel. Mass Nutrition covers all your fitness needs. Owned and operated independently by Australia's best bodybuilders, you know you're not only getting the best brands at the best prices, but you're getting truly expert advice as well. Fuel your fire at one of our Mass Nutrition retail outlets or shop online at massnutrition.com.au.
Here's to the athlete, the bodybuilder, the figure competitor, those who are committed, those who sacrifice, those who want to be different, the ones that get up an hour before they have to, that put their body on the line for their goals and are never, ever satisfied with close enough. You can ridicule them, but you can never ignore them, because they challenge the way people make them think about themselves. And while the masses try to confine them and dismiss them, at ATP we celebrate their achievements, their dedication, and why they improve the world. Visit us on Facebook or at www.atpscience.com.
My Muscle Chef is the perfect solution for anyone who doesn't want to spend hours cooking, cleaning, and doing groceries every week. You can now focus on your training knowing your diet is taken care of. All you need to do is microwave and eat. To order, simply jump online at MyMuscleChef.com or call 1-300-364-993.
Welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio. I'm joined once again by Scott Goble, and we are here for his segments of the week, his Bodybuilding Yes or No and Ask Scotty. Now, Scott, are we ready?
I'm ready, mate.
All right, first question is, will Ben Pekulski beat his Arnold Classic Columbus look? At the Arnold Classic Brazil, obviously.
Yes, I think he will. I think he'll be in proper condition. I don't know if that means he's going to be better than last year at Columbus, because he did seem to have some issue going on with his back development. So I don't know if he's going to replicate the look of last year, but I think he'll be a little bit better than Columbus.
Okay, next question. In your opinion, does William Bonac have a better than 50% chance of winning the Arnold Classic Brazil?
It's so hard to put percentages on these things. Lionel Bierke is a much greater than 50% chance of being off. So can sort of discount that variable. I only really think Kuklo and Bierke have the ability to beat Bonac. I don't even think Juan or John De La Rosa, Fred Small, anyone like that could beat him, even if they were 100% on the money. So of those two guys, I don't think either one of them has ever rocked up in absolute diamond hard, you know, Dexter Jackson-like condition. So, yeah, I think he does. Better than 50% chance.
Yep, no, I totally agree with that as well. Okay, next question. Will Amit Sapir, who there's been some pictures coming out of his camp lately where he's had made some big improvements, will he place higher than Beto Abbasbor at the 212 New York Pro?
Wow.
That's a random one.
That is random. Luckily, I am very familiar with Amit, and I've seen him do some YouTube clips of just squatting, just absolute insane things. I think he's got a background in weightlifting or powerlifting or something. He's an absolute beast in the gym. Look, wouldn't surprise me if he did, but I think Bauto's the more experienced competitor. I think Bauto's going to have a lot of eyes on him because he is making that move. I think Bauto maybe will just edge him out.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be closer. I think people, because I saw a picture actually put up that Mitch Peer, where he's like, I think it was last year at the same time while he's prepping and 3 weeks out, he was, I think, 203 pounds or something like that. And then this year, the same amount of weeks out, 3 weeks out, and he's, I think, 19 pounds heavier, exactly. It looks like the same condition.
He's, He's an absolute beast. I remember seeing pictures of him 3 years ago. I'm just thinking this guy's a joke. Like, he doesn't belong in the pros. And now he's an absolute mutant. I'm really impressed with the improvements he's made over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and he's working with John Meadows this year as well. So I think that's, he can kind of credit some of that to John Meadows and how much, you know, obviously knowledge he has. And what do you think about John Meadows, actually, like his training theory, Scotty? Because he has his guys like that he preps and stuff. He gets them actually training like 7 days a week, which is, I mean, to most people it sounds pretty nuts, like, you know, through a whole prep.
It does sound pretty crazy. I know that not every one of those days is a maximum balls to the wall, super high intensity day. He has sort of days which he classifies as recovery days, where he doesn't push them to failure or doesn't use any intensity techniques, and he doesn't have his guys, as a general rule, do a whole lot of cardio. So I think in terms of overall workload, you can probably get away with it if you do have all those other things in place. If you've got, you know, sound nutrition and good sleep, and you're not, busting out an hour to 2 hours of cardio every day, I think potentially you could get away with that, but probably only for a certain period of time. I know John doesn't do that 365 days of the year. In fact, he's apparently only trains 4 days a week a lot of the time during his off season. So as many of those workouts are for the metabolic benefit as they are for stimulating muscle growth. So look, I like it. I like a lot of the stuff John Meadows does. So, and he certainly knows how to get in shape, and he knows how to get guys in shape. So can't argue with the results either.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll move on, Scotty. We're going to talk, do your Ask Scotty segment. We've just got two questions this week. The first one is, you might even want me to ask the second question after this because you might want to think about it. But the first question is, if you owned a supplement company or a clothing company or whatever, who would you sign as a sponsored athlete? If you could kind of sign, if you had, you know, a maximum budget, but, you know, on dollar for dollar, who would you sign?
Like John Jones from the UFC or...
No, bodybuilder.
In the world? Internationally?
Yeah. But like in terms of, you can't just say Phil Heath because, you know, you have unlimited money, but just say you could sign anyone.
Well, I need a budget to work with.
Say I had a budget of, just say, 40 grand a year.
Oh, 40 grand a year, I could get some decent people. Look, I would, first thing I'd be doing is I'd be getting some chicks with the spectacular fake racks that post regularly on Instagram because they automatically have 60,000 followers, whereas battlers like you and I have like 1,200. So that's probably where a lot of my money would go, as sad as that is. But if I was to look at Australian bodybuilders, I don't know who I'd want to sponsor. In terms of the guys, you want guys with a lot of reach, and you know they're fairly articulate and they understand the business of bodybuilding. You know what, you're not actually a bad sponsor. I can see why you're signing up a fair few people, because you've got RX behind you, so that's pretty handy. I might even swing, you know, $300 of my budget towards you.
Thanks,
so
mate.
Now I've got $39,700 left to spend on chicks with big tits. I don't know. It's a hard one. I think Shembri is pretty good, the way he promotes particular brands. I know he's recently signed on with Activewear Online, and he's pretty proactive about getting the brand out there without sort of going over the top about it. People may give Chris Jenkins shit, but Chris Jenkins can get a brand out there as well. I don't know. I wouldn't be signing up people which just create drama online. You know, I would avoid those people. I'd be looking for people that are just fairly positive and proactive. It's a really hard question. I haven't really thought about it.
Yeah, it is tough, isn't it? There's like you said, Chris Jenkins and stuff. Like, it seems like, obviously, some people that really promote themselves well and do that kind of stuff, some people see it as being like, that person's cocky or whatever, or I don't know, they love themselves or whatever. But generally, they're the people that are really successful. So,
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you have to be proactive, and you have to push yourself out there. And if that makes you look cocky, then so be it. I mean, I'd love to sign up guys which are just, you know, I'd like to hang out with, you know, like I'd love to give Figuera a sponsorship or something like that, or I'd love to give, you know, Abe a sponsorship or Timsy a sponsorship just because they're great bodybuilders, but none of them will promote your brand very actively. Luke's getting a bit better at it.
I've noticed Tim's has gotten better at it.
Yeah, but, you know, you hear nothing from Abe, you hear nothing from Justin. They may be sponsored, but, you know, it'd be tough. I'd probably give it to Gretchy. Gretchy would be right up there because he's proactive. He doesn't, you know, oversell things. He's highly visible. He's pretty influential in his area. Yeah, tough question, man. I'd have to stop and think about it, probably.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, next question. This is the last one. Who is the best poser in current day bodybuilding, in your opinion? And you can't pick yourself.
Oh no, look, we're going worldwide, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going pros. Yeah.
It's not Kai Greene. Like, I don't believe it's Kai Greene because I don't think he always hits his mandatories and stuff perfectly.
Yep.
Let's see. Oh man, that's another one. I'm sure there's someone real obvious that I should be thinking about. Like, you know, Fred Smalls is awesome. But more so from a routine standpoint. I like the way Hede and Wolf pose because it's more that classical style, which I relate to.
Yeah.
But there's no super standout that I can think of.
Yeah. Like you actually mentioned him. The guy who I'd pick would be Hede. I think his posing is freaking awesome. Like, he's one of the few guys that can do the kind of... He's kind of got, like, does the classical poses and stuff like that, but he has his own little flair to it, which I kind of really like because he's not just, I don't know, he just brings something a bit different to the classical type of posing, which I really like, and he hits his shots really, I mean, spot on. You can tell he just practices it, and he probably doesn't do it so much now, but you can tell he just practices it like an art and stuff like he used to do back in the day.
Yeah, he's pretty good, and even his mandatories have nice little transitions in between him. He's never really relaxed, so yeah, I think might be Hede, but there's no one setting new standards. You know, there's no Labrada, or if you watch Kevin Leverone hit mandatory poses, run through the mandatories, it was a show in itself. So yeah, there's no one like that these days.
Yeah, and it sucks, but I think obviously there's a few good poses. You got obviously your Fred Smalls, your Hede's, your Dennis Wolf's. There's a few other good ones as well. I think even guys like Phil Heath and stuff, he hits some hits of the poses quite well, and his routines, you know, they're not always absolutely amazing and awesome, but he goes out there and puts on a show, and you know, hits a lot of big shots, and it's an entertaining routine still. So guys like that are cool, but the ones that come out and they can't pose for shit, it just frustrates me.
Yeah, oh, totally. I can't believe you can get to the pro ranks and not be able to pose, probably.
Yeah, exactly. But Scotty, that is it for both of us this week. Stay tuned, obviously, everyone, to rxmuscle.com to see all the coverage on the Brazil Arnold Classic. It's going to be an absolutely massive comp, and they're going to have all the, you know, probably like a preview show. They're going to have the wrap-up videos. They're going to have the play-by-play. We've got absolutely everything from there, so stay tuned for that. I want to thank a few of our sponsors, bulknutrients.com.au. Check out their website, their monthly special. International Protein, Christine Enville and Troy Bremner there, sending out some great products. Mass Nutrition, 40 stores plus around Australia, including yours, Scotty. And, of course, Species Nutrition, the main sponsor of RX Muscle Australia. So Scott Goble and I, we're out, and stay tuned for our interview of the week with Aaron Pilates and then Matt Legg with 2 Minutes with a Scientist.
Editor-in-Chief of RX Muscle Australia, Xavier Wills, is an amateur bodybuilder who's won state titles and competed on the national level. He's been competing since the age of 16 and wants to bring his knowledge to you. Xavier offers full off-season and contest preparation plans at affordable prices to get you shredded and ready to hit the stage without sacrificing that hard-earned muscle. Xavier keeps in constant contact with his clients and offers text message support, weekly Skype or phone calls, and personalized assessments to keep you on track and get the results you desire. You can contact Xavier Wills on his official Facebook page by searching for his name. You can also find Xavier on rxmuscle.com.au, or you can send him an email at xavierwills@rxmuscle.com.au. Get in shape now. Contact Xavier Wills today.
Need that edge in your training to push past barriers, break PBs, and take the body you've been working so hard for to the next level? Well, look no further. Gripped Fitness, the brand that supports the industry and Australia's top athletes. Gripped has a complete range of lifting accessories and apparel designed to get you lifting more, while providing the needed support and aesthetics to take your body to the next level. Check them out at www.gripped.com.au. Get a grip.
International Protein is an Australian company owned by qualified food scientist, IFBB Pro, and three-time world champion Christine Enville. At International Protein, we don't believe in selling overhyped or fad products, so you can be assured that if a product has our name on it, the formulation has been developed based on the latest nutritional research in the field of strength and conditioning performance. At the core of International Protein, there are five key principles: taste, quality, affordability, results, and flexibility. Christine Enville is proud to share her successful nutritional formulations with people who are serious about their body, their sport, and their performance, so they too can reach their ultimate goals. Look for International Protein in all good health food and supplement stores. Paying inflated prices for products which are full of hype and fillers? At Bulk Nutrients, you get the purest products available direct from our factory. There are no middlemen, contractors, distributors, or shop fronts. Bulk Nutrients stocks protein, carbs, aminos, pre-workout recovery, encapsulated products, fat burners, test boosters, and so much more. Bulk Nutrients is 100% Australian owned and operated, and will give you higher quality and better prices guaranteed. So visit bulknutrients.com.au. It's your one-stop shop.
Welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio. This week I'm joined by the under 80 kilo winner at FedEx and the Australasians in 2014. I'm joined by Aaron Pilates once again. Aaron, welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio.
How you going?
Very good, mate. Now, you're coming off a very successful year. You were in obviously that FedEx lineup and the Australasian lineup in the under 80 kilo class, and mate, it was a very, very tough class, and you were kind of, you brought scales to Melbourne, and obviously you would have had them in New South Wales as well, where you had to weigh in under 80 kilos. Was that a struggle to make that weight?
Yeah, well, it's the first time, obviously I started competing last year, where I did novice classes, so it's the first time I've ever had to weigh in, and because it was the first time, I was a little bit stressed that I wasn't going to make weight, because, like, in the last week, I was still a few kilos over, and I thought I'd be cutting a bit fine, but I ended up dropping a bit more than I thought. And I think on the day of FedEx, I ended up coming in pretty comfortably. I think I was like 79.4 or something like that. So it still sounds close, but I thought it was going to be a lot closer than that, but it ended up being fine.
Yeah, quite easily by 600 grams. But no, I think that's the same way for a few competitors. They kind of get really stressed about their weight, and they'll make sure they really get under, so... Obviously, you only made it by 600 grams, really, so it wasn't by that much. But were you kind of like, I remember early on in the prep, you were kind of umming and ahhing whether to do under 90s or under 80s. What was the kind of the final deciding factor?
Yeah, the whole prep, I thought under 90s for sure. But because the first time I ever competed, I only dropped like about 8 kilos from start of prep to the end of prep. So I didn't drop, obviously, I wasn't that fat in the off-season. So but this time around... I was 95 and got to obviously 79.4, so I dropped about 15 and a half. I decided to, I gauged it on that. I didn't think that I'd make the under 80s. I didn't think I had 15 kilos of fat and water on me, but I think I was holding a little bit more water and fat than I thought. I was about 10% body fat, but obviously I had more than I thought. So when I got closer in the last month or two, me and Logan realised that I probably would push for the under 80s. Rather just scrape in there and fill the whole weight class out as opposed to just being the bottom end of the under-90s class.
Exactly. I think people hold a lot more water than they think in off-season as well. Like once you see, like, you know, after a few weeks of dieting and your cheeks go down, you're like, oh shit, yeah. I was holding a fair bit of water in my off-season, so.
Yeah, definitely.
Obviously, you made that class. And was that a strategic thing? Were you doing that because you thought it might be, I suppose, like a slightly easier class? Because typically the lower weight's slightly easier, but... You didn't tend to really get a much easier class in the under 90s.
At first, I thought it would be, but to be fully honest, like after seeing both competitions, FedEx and Australasia's, I believe the under-80s controversially had a stronger lineup than the under-90s at times anyway. So it didn't end up being an easy class at all. So, but I just thought I'd rather fill the weight class regardless, and it'll probably be the last time I ever make that weight anyway.
Exactly. We'll talk a little bit more about those comps in a second, but you, yesterday I was recording an episode of Max's Muscle TV, and I noticed actually you put up a picture before, you're recording it with your sister, who, Hannah Pilates, who's got an absolute shit ton. I can't remember how many followers she's got on Instagram and stuff now, but it's absolutely massive. Now, what did you guys film, and what can we kind of expect to see when that airs?
Yeah, well, they contacted me and said, for a couple of times I was going to be on the show, and then they're looking for like an angle of what how to shoot it and what they're going for. And then after obviously I won the last couple, they said, we'll get you on. And they rang me and said, we're looking for a different angle and we want to put your sister on, because she's got, I think at the moment, it's 247,000 followers on Instagram. And they're trying to go get a different angle. So if they put her on the show, they can target the audience of the young female generation. And she's got a very achievable physique and, you know, and the whole brother-sister aspect of it, training together. Any boyfriend or girlfriend or brother and sister that want to train together, just showing it can easily be achieved. Like, even though I train majority like a bodybuilder, 80% of my training she can do anyway. I only have to change a couple of little small things and you can easily train with her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, like, obviously, you know, she, like you said, she's got how many? 250,000 or something?
Yeah, 247. Every day it goes up. It was 235 last week, so...
Gee, that's insane. And you've actually, like, I looked, checked out your social media, and your followers are getting up there as well. I think you got 8,000 now, or, like, I think you was 7,998 when I checked today, so you're about to hit 8,000. Now, that's a lot for especially a guy in the industry. I mean, most guys in the industry, unless you're a pro, you don't have that many followers. So how have you kind of managed to get that many followers? Has your sister helped you out at all?
She would never shout me out, eh? I've asked her so many times to shout me out. She doesn't do shout-outs at all. She just thinks it cheapens her page. But she's probably got me about 400 followers, which is not a lot, because maybe 500. She actually did shout me out in the last week for Max's Muscle TV. And about a month ago when we went to a birthday lunch or something, I was in a photo with her. She looked really good, so she tagged me in that. And that gave me about, 150 that time. So other than that, she hasn't really shouted me out that much, but my followers have sort of just progressed slowly, and every time I've done a comp, they've jumped up at least 1,500, and a couple of times I've been shouted out by bodybuilding pages, and that always helps, but yeah, it's nothing on hers.
Yeah, definitely. But I noticed that I saw a photo go up on the weekend. We mentioned it at the end of a radio show with Mick, actually, which I recorded last night. Your mum's, was it like a hair salon that burnt down?
Yeah, last week they were out for dinner. We were at home, Jade and I cooking, and then there was three fire brigade fire trucks there, and they rang mum and dad, and a little gecko, like a little lizard, got in the air conditioner and shorted it out and started a fire. So apparently the fire brigade said it's real common and it happens all the time, and it burned a salon down to nothing pretty much, which they lost inside and...
That's crazy. Yeah. So that really happens all the time.
Yeah, like you wouldn't believe it. Like he said, this is so common. Geckos are shortening out these aircon units. He said to the point where they've contacted companies and they're trying to make new products gecko proof. So obviously, like as a safety device or something, if it does shorten out, that it won't happen like this, because it causes a lot of fires, you reckon? So
that's insane.
Yeah.
So I mean, was it a hair salon?
Yeah, it was a hair salon, yeah, so we were there help. My dad's a builder, luckily, so we were there through the week on the weekend. Mum and dad are there still today, stripping everything out, and you can barely breathe in there. All the products are wrecked. Had to pull every single product one by one, and there's like thousands of products in there, and take photos of everything, and then take photo of every label and every part number of every machine in there for the insurance and that, so... That's a major pain in the ass.
That's insane. And imagine all that stuff, like all the hairsprays and all that stuff, like would be like really flammable. So
yeah,
once you catch on fire.
Lucky it didn't destroy the whole building, because there's people living above it and little kids that live there. And lucky it didn't destroy everything, because there was heaps of flammable equipment in there that didn't get burned, that sort of it got left alone, like it burned everything around it but didn't get to it, so it could have been a lot worse, could have burned down the whole building to nothing, but, and yeah.
Yeah, it's lucky. But with your contest prep this year, we'll get back onto that. Now, you prepped with your partner, Jade Mills, who obviously did very well, and she won her class, which was, I think, like, had like, I don't know if it was like 40 or 50 girls in it, which was pretty insane. I've considered, like, when Holly decides to compete, my partner, for the first time, I've considered prepping at the same time as her. Would you recommend this, or would you recommend doing it separately? Because I can't imagine that would be the most easy thing. I mean, it was hard enough in our household with me prepping alone, but with two people prepping, I imagine it's pretty difficult.
Yeah, this is a pretty common question I've been asked. It's probably definitely a good idea if you feel like testing your relationship, testing how strong it is. We were fine at the start, probably the first few months. Everyone was like, "How do you do it? How do you do it?" And I'm like, "I don't know what they're whinging about. It's not even hard." But I was a lot better at this prepper thing. And I didn't get a little grumpy until really the last few weeks. Then in the last 6 weeks, you know, I actually started arguing a fair bit, and she couldn't stand that. I was up till like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning at times, you know, cooking and still eating because catching up on meals, and she'd stay awake because I'm up and it was doing her head in, and we'd be grumpy and arguing all the time and just arguing over nothing in the end because we were both hungry and grumpy. So in the last 3 weeks, she moved out to her friend's house to give me space and to give us both space, and then she returned back after the comp was over. So it definitely pushed the limits in the last few weeks, but up to that point it was fine.
Yeah, I found like especially the last year, like 3-4 weeks kind of thing, I just don't want to talk. Like I found I just wanted to be silent, just do my own thing, and just
yeah, exactly. Like I just came home exactly the same thing. At least last year I did talk, but I was angry and grumpy to everyone. This year I just went real quiet and silent, and I just keep to myself. But that's pretty boring for her, and she'd get frustrated with that. And I come home, and all I want to do is once I've done all my cooking and prepping, I just want to sit on the couch and do nothing, you know, and maybe sit on, which girls hate, sit on your phone or just not interact with anyone.
Yeah.
So obviously girlfriends are going to hate that. So that's where it went bad in the end.
That's exactly what I want to do. I literally just sit on the couch and just go on my iPad or whatever and just chill out. And I think, like, I was kind of thinking, like, why is that annoying, Holly? Like, why am I so annoying? But it's because I'm just not saying shit the whole time. Like, I'm just sitting there doing absolutely nothing. And I'm like, I'm not doing anything wrong. But it's like, yeah. I'm not really being much of a boyfriend. But, so I can understand it now.
You pretty much just lose your personality in the last few weeks. And you're saving every bit of energy you have for doing your chores and training and prepping. So talking and interacting is just more energy that you'd have to expend when you don't really have it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm definitely going to get Holly to listen to this interview so she can see I'm not the only one like this. So.
Yeah. Everyone would be the same. I don't know how anyone could go through one together without arguing or struggling through it. But if they do, they're unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you've qualified for 212 Pro Qualifier at the Arnold Classic Australia next year, as far as I know, from winning the Australasians. Now, are we going to see you on stage there?
That's still a hard question. At this point, I'm probably just going to stick to the weight class for another year, I think. But it depends on how good this off-season is and how I'm feeling, and I'll weigh up then. But it's the same as last year. I sort of take it as it comes. But at the moment, I'm going to stick to an under-90s category, give that a crack, especially being the first Arnolds. Only because I'd love to enter the pro qualifier being 100% fully confident when everything's happened so quickly lately, and I still don't believe I'm at that level yet, but we'll have to wait and see.
I'm pretty much sure that you're going to get talked into doing that pro qualifier, because I know there's people like me who want to see you. I'm much more excited to see you in a pro qualifier division rather than an under-90. Like, an under-90 obviously is massive, but a pro qualified division just adds more to that, obviously, that class, and just adds more, I suppose, competition and stuff as well. Do you think you're going to be pretty easily talked into it? Because I think you're going to have a fair few people in your ear telling you to do that.
Yeah, well, it's hard to say, but I'll know. Like, if I can manage to put on the same amount as I did last year again this year, then there's probably a good possibility that I will do it. Yeah. But that all depends now. It's too early to call at the moment. But if I can manage to put on the same amount of weight and size as I did last off-season, I probably will give it a crack.
Awesome. Now, yeah. Obviously, going into the, you know, the 212 over the next few years, it seems like there's a lot of kind of names popping up with possible contenders over the next few years. I mean, you've got, like, you know, Dominic Selwood, who got second to you at FedEx. You've got Vinny Agostino, who I don't know what he's doing now, but he didn't compete this year. You got Adam Browner, you got Mark Gretsch, you got maybe like Chris Thomas might do it. So you got quite a few names there that might be jumping into that kind of, I suppose, you know, 212 pro qualifier type division. Who do you see? Is there anyone you see, like any of the young guys or anything like that, that might be kind of moving to this 212, you know, potentially be like a 212 pro in the future? Who do you see as being maybe someone who's going to win it over the next few years?
I think Sonny will. It's just a matter of time. I don't know what sort of weight he'll fall into. So he's still got a lot of weight to put on to still make the 212. So I think if anyone in the future could succeed, it's him, as he's only still 23 and he's the most dedicated bodybuilder that I know. So off the top of my head, most likely him.
Yeah, I actually forgot about Sonny because I saw him in the hotel room and, like, I saw his, obviously, his legs absolutely insane. Like, they were just so thick and stuff. And I actually kind of thought, oh, no, he would be an open guy. But, yeah, he has actually the under-90s. So, yeah, he's obviously another one in there that's going to be a contender as well. So that's exciting. I think, you know, going forward as well, the open class pro qualifier is going to have a few new guys coming through as well. So I'm excited for that. But
As soon as he sorts his his protocol there for his final few weeks is obviously, I wanted to touch on that he sort of copped a bit of slack after the last couple of comps, and especially these online keyboard warriors giving it to him, especially over our cheat meals in the last 10 weeks of prep and everything. But he had probably the best condition that I've seen out of anybody a couple of weeks out. He was definitely ahead of me. And, you know, he's just got to work on his peak week. And once he nails that, then everyone's in a bit of trouble, I think. So, you know, I just thought I'd touch on that while you're...
Yeah, of course, and we'll talk about that a bit more because, yeah, like, there was a lot of people that just jumped on Sonny, and I think there's people waiting for one of you guys that did the cheat meals to come in slightly off or whatever so they could jump on it and say, look, it doesn't work, it's bullshit, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, like you said, Sonny was looking in very good condition from what I saw in pictures I saw leading up to the show. It's just that last week where he's obviously very sensitive to carbs and all that type of stuff as well, so... you know, he obviously responds different to everyone, and it was his first prep working with Chris Thomas, I think it was too, so, you know, they're still kind of learning his body and how it works and all that kind of stuff, but obviously, you know, it definitely didn't affect you of your conditioning, and you were doing the massive cheat meals and stuff like that, and, you know, people obviously aren't going to highlight that if they're going to try to bag it. I mean, like, obviously you were doing the cheat meals and stuff like that, obviously it worked for you. Is this something you're going to kind of continue?
Yeah, it definitely worked for me to treat, so... I won't change anything next prep round, so I think it worked for him as well. The cheat was had absolutely nothing to do with it because, a week out, the photos that Sonny was sending me, and I could see him at gym, he looked unbelievable, so it's just completely irrelevant, but people just love to put people down, and we knew the whole time during a prep, we said to each other, oh, we stuff this, if we end up not coming in shredded, we're going to cop shit over these cheat meals because we used to tag everyone in them and be so public on Facebook about it. And obviously it shits people off if they're not allowed to have cheat meals and we're sitting there eating whatever we want every week. But it didn't affect my condition whatsoever. And I don't think it affected his at all either. It's just his peak week that affected him.
Yeah, exactly. And I was doing like pretty big cheat meals. Once I heard you guys were doing I can't remember how many hours you guys were doing, if it was like 8 or 10 hours or whatever it was, but yeah, I started going for like, you know, 6 hours and stuff like that in my cheat meals, and yeah. I felt like it actually helped me, and when I actually cut them out, like at the end, I felt like I just kind of, I don't know, it just didn't look as good, so I think even next time I'll keep them right through even to like a week out maybe.
Yeah, I think I did them every single week till 2 weeks out, and then that was it, so like last year I stopped 2 months out and did them every fortnight, and then... stopped a few weeks out, but yeah, next prep I'll do exactly the same thing again. Won't change anything.
Are you going to continue working with Logan? I believe he helped you this year, didn't he?
Yeah, I got no reason to change. We work well together. This prep was so much easier than the last prep. Like, I memorised it from the year before, and it feels like it's easy now. So the next third time around should be a breeze. Yeah. I work well with him, so I won't be changing.
What do you most want to improve, like, the next year, like, coming on, like, in terms of, like, you know, like, body parts or, like, is there something else you want to improve in terms of your prep or anything like that?
Yeah, purely just legs. I keep the focus on the legs. Like, I had a few good comments about the amount of leg size I put on in the last off-season, but, you know, I just want that freakish leg size that, like, the pros have. Like,
there's so much more room for improvement in the legs. Like, you pretty much never can have big enough legs. Yeah, so I'll focus purely on that. I made a little bit of back thickness. Like, I didn't do a lot of deadlifting in the off season. I probably did it in the last few months with Adam Dowling and Sonny. Probably did it about 13 times, and it helped a lot. I noticed getting thicker even in the final few weeks, like, of the prep. So in this off season, Sunday night, I'm focusing on a fair bit of heavy lifting, deadlifting, and obviously just legs as much as I can do. If I can train legs 3 times a week, I'll do them 3 times a week. But at the moment, it's twice a week, but as much as I can.
Yeah, you made some like really good gains in legs like over the past year, obviously. What was you doing for legs? Like, was it just like a matter of just really hardcore hard training, or was it there different techniques, high reps, low reps?
What works for me, I do legs twice a week in the last off season, and I have one heavy day, so squats, and just always start with leg extensions, and one heavy day, and then one light rep, high rep day, which I did. We do leg press, and we do like most of the sets on the high rep day are 30 reps plus, and then every now and then we might chuck like 6 plates on a leg press and see how many reps we could do. And I think Adam Branner, I trained with him, he got 100 reps out of a 6 plate leg press, and I got 75. That was the most pain I've ever been in. I think I did 75 reps of 6 plates aside. He did 100 and things like that. Just massive, massive high reps. But I find the high rep days more fatiguing and just destroy me more than the heavy days. So,
yeah, that's brutal. Legs twice a week. I mean, most people struggle to do them once a week, so that's pretty insane.
Yeah, that combination works unbelievable. Like, at first, I was always sore. And then towards the end, you get used to it. You recover in time. But I get used to training them again when they're already sore.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Now, I mean, you don't see many young guys these days. Like, you know, with the kind of obviously what you know you've done. I mean, a few other guys now, you know, Sonny and stuff like that, actually have the size at a young age. I mean, why do you think that is? Because you used to get that back in the 90s and stuff. Obviously, you have the Sean Rays and all those guys, you know, being pro at 21 and stuff like that. Do you think it's just a matter of guys just not training hard enough, or what do you think is like the main kind of reason?
I think it's a combination of, obviously, genetics play into it a lot. Guys not training hard enough, number two. And people probably don't realise that a lot of young guys look at me and Sonny and think, oh, look how big they've got so quick. But Sonny and I both started training fairly young. Like, I think he was training when he was in school. And so I was like, I started training, I think I was in grade 9 at school. You know, I didn't take it as seriously, but I pretty much always trained at least 3 or 4 times a week. Most of my life since I was 16 years old, you know, I didn't get real serious till about 21, but I was always in the gym from that young age. And a lot of these young guys are sort of just starting fresh at, you know, 19, 20. So that I'm 25, but I've been training probably 9 years.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what people don't see as well. They just see the past few years and think, geez, what T done kind of thing. Like, why is he able to do that? So
obviously once I pissed off all the partying and got a few mentors, like close friends, that actually told me how to eat properly and how to train properly, it obviously tripled and ramped up in the last final years. My body responded greatly, but yeah, I'll put it down to that.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you're only, how old are you now?
25.
How do you stay grounded? Because you're obviously getting a lot of attention and stuff of how you looked and obviously winning these two titles and winning last year as well. How do you manage to stay grounded? Especially now Gally's well, now he's moving over to Thailand, and I think he's actually probably on a plane right now.
Yeah.
he kind of, I think he took the credit for keeping you grounded, so how are you going to stay grounded about him?
Yeah, between him and Logan always telling me not to get a massive head, but honestly, I don't think you start getting a big head till you turn pro, so especially when, like, yeah, it's been good winning the last few comps and everything, but I've only got one Australian title, and FedEx titles don't count as Australian title, do they? So, but when you've got friends like Galen that he's got 5, I don't really have, couldn't really get much of a big head because he's got 5 times more than me.
Exactly, yeah. And the thing is, well, when you like meet a pro and they're really grounded and they treat you like, you know, they're no better than you and stuff like that, how much more do you like them? You know what I mean? There's no reason to.
Yeah. Like Flex Lewis.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone loves him and he's, you know, most down-to-earth guy, and he's, you know, the 212 Mr. Olympia.
Exactly. Like, I think I'd 100%, if I ever become pro, would mould it on the way Flex Lewis acts and how he's presented in the public. Like, he's just such a positive person, and I spoke to him a couple of times, and he dead set had about half an hour for me one time at Firelax, just speaking to him, and had so much time, and he's so down-to-earth and a good role model, that that's the sort of person you want to be like, instead of being, you know, cocky and this and that. And just, I'd rather be like Flex Lewis as opposed to Phil Heath, a different story. Like, he reminds me a little bit like Muhammad Ali, how he loves himself, but...
Yeah, but in a way, he can kind of get away with it. But still, even like Phil Heath, the way he is and stuff, some people don't like him, you know what I mean? But
a lot of people hate it, but like if I talk, he's cocky, he's this and that, but I'm like, he's the man, though.
Yeah.
He's number one. Like, I think it's more confidence over arrogance, but I don't think he's as bad as what people say, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just people want to always talk down the champ as well, because you've got, like, obviously... Ronnie Coleman, when he was the champ, there's people saying, oh, Jay Cutler should beat him, and people just not liking him, almost not liking him as a person, because he was, winning every year. And then as soon as he gets knocked off, everyone starts, everyone likes Ronnie all of a sudden because he's not the champ, so.
Yeah, well, people like to support the underdog. It's like a lot of the public tries to support, to support Kai Green over Phil, but, Phil, everyone judges their... how they see Phil from Generation 9, I believe, and that's the... And Gally's told me that when he had a photo shoot with Charles in America, they sat there and he had a good chat with Phil. I don't know if you've heard this story. For like half a day he spent with Phil Heath in a photo shoot, and he got to actually talk to him, and he said he didn't really talk much the first hour, then eventually he opened up, and Phil Heath said to Gally, I didn't really like the way they portrayed me on Generation 9.
Yeah.
He says these certain things, but the way they put it together sort of made him look real cocky and arrogant, and made him look like he's been rich his whole life. And he said, I didn't really like the way they painted me in that light. But so people just judge him from that, but he's probably not even that bad in real life.
Exactly. And I think the thing is as well, like, going into that Generation 9, everyone's going to try to come over with a certain persona and stuff. And I think Phil Heath was probably going for the, like you said, like the Muhammad Ali type persona and stuff, and he didn't maybe quite pull it off in that way, or it wasn't portrayed quite in that way, where it came across as, he was kind of cocky, but everyone likes him for it, and he was kind of charismatic, and it didn't come across like that as well. So in the end, it kind of made him look like the bad guy, and Kai Green look like the good guy, so.
Yeah, I know. And Kai Green doesn't even live in that area anymore. Like, he lives in a nice house now, but they made him shoot the film where he grew up, and he, obviously he's done the hard times, because that's not a lie that he has, but... It's just that I think they exaggerated it all a bit too much, but...
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is that, yeah, they did try to make it look like a certain thing, and people inside of bodybuilding, which is, I think most of who are actually going to watch the movie, know that some of these things aren't true, which kind of makes you think, like, oh, how much of this is real and how much is just totally set up and all that kind of stuff, so...
Yeah, because let's be honest, if you're watching it and you didn't know anything about these guys, you're going to be thinking Phil Heath's driving around a Bentley, living in a mansion, having spa baths every day, living like a king, and Kai Green's living like a hobo. And they're going to feel sorry for Kai Green, and he's going to get the sympathy vote. But I don't think that's the way it is anymore, but I suppose it makes for good TV.
Exactly. And look how they did the Phil Heath thing, where he's running around like the mountains in Denver. And and it's like he's not going to go up, drive up there, get out of his car, then go run around the mountains for half an hour and then drive home, is he?
I don't even know bodybuilders run anyway.
Exactly.
I can't believe when I've seen him running.
It's like, yeah, I think back in the day, they put Ronnie Coleman on like one of the Tonight Shows in America, and they showed him running across the beach, and it looked like the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, Phil Heath looked ridiculous when he was running. He looked so heavy, and I don't know why he was running in the first place, but.
But anyway, mate, I want to thank you once again for coming on Aussie Muscle Radio. Do you have any sponsors out there you want to thank?
Yeah, I want to thank my new sponsor that took me on about a month ago. Month or two ago, PSI Distribution and BPM Labs, Simply Aesthetic Clothing, Mass Nutrition, Grip Fitness, and obviously FMA Fitness Management Australia.
Awesome, excellent, mate. Thanks once again for coming on Aussie Muscle Radio. That's Aaron Pilates, under 80 kilo, FedEx, and Australasian champion.
Mass Nutrition is Australia's premier sports supplement provider, with over 13 stores Australia-wide, stocking everything from protein powders and pre-workout mixes to weightlifting accessories and gym apparel. Mass Nutrition covers all your fitness needs. Owned and operated independently by Australia's best bodybuilders, you know you're not only getting the best brands at the best prices, but you're getting truly expert advice as well. Fuel your fire at one of our Mass Nutrition retail outlets, or shop online at massnutrition.com.au.
Here's to the athlete, the bodybuilder, the figure competitor, those who are committed, those who sacrifice, those who want to be different.
the ones that get up an hour before they have to, that put their body on the line for their goals and are never, ever satisfied with close enough. You can ridicule them, but you can never ignore them, because they challenge the way people make them think about themselves. And while the masses try to confine them and dismiss them, at ATP we celebrate their achievements, their dedication, and why they improve the world. Visit us on Facebook or at www.atpscience.com.
My Muscle Chef is the perfect solution for anyone who doesn't want to spend hours cooking, cleaning, and doing groceries every week. You can now focus on your training knowing your diet is taken care of. All you need to do is microwave and eat. To order, simply jump online at MyMuscleChef.com or call 1-300-364-993.
Editor-in-Chief of RX Muscle Australia, Xavier Wills, is an amateur bodybuilder who's won state titles and competed on the national level. He's been competing since the age of 16 and wants to bring his knowledge to you. Xavier offers full off-season and contest preparation plans at affordable prices to get you shredded and ready to hit the stage without sacrificing that hard-earned muscle. Xavier keeps in constant contact with his clients and offers text message support, weekly Skype or phone calls, and personalized assessments to keep you on track and get the results you desire. You can contact Xavier Wills on his official Facebook page by searching for his name. You can also find Xavier on rxmuscle.com.au, or you can send him an email at xavierwills@rxmuscle.com.au. Get in shape now. Contact Xavier Wills today.
Need that edge in your training to push past barriers, break PBs, and take the body you've been working so hard for to the next level? Well, look no further. Gripped Fitness, the brand that supports the industry and Australia's top athletes. Gripped has a complete range of lifting accessories and apparel designed to get you lifting more, while providing the needed support and aesthetics to take your body to the next level. Check them out at www.gripped.com.au. Get a grip. Welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio. We've got another 2 minutes with a scientist, and we are joined, as always, by ATP's chief head scientist, Matthew Legg. Matt, we're here. We're going to be talking about Prototype 7 today. It's been absolutely going crazy. We got to see it at FitX 2014, and we got to see the whole line of products as well, from the Prototype 7 to the Dragon's Breath to the Limitless. Everything was there. But Let's talk about some Prototype 7 protocols and what, I suppose, you know, people have been testing it out on, and what people like to do in terms of, you know, pre-workout, putting it on halfway through their workout or at the end of their workout. Talk a bit about, I suppose, what people have found and what you think is actually most effective.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if you're aware, but Prototype 7, we originally developed it. Oh, it has been used in my clinic for years to treat numb feet in diabetics. So after after their blood vessels were destroyed by the sugar, and they had numb feet, you know, and all the gangrene and can't heal wounds. And what we'd get those guys to do is rub it as a cream onto their feet, and it would open up the blood vessels and drag the blood to the feet. And then of course that led into versions of it being used for Viagra creams and that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah.
But and hair products. Before we started using it in with the bodybuilders and the sport. What's really interesting about it is we're still kind of working with a lot of the good athletes to work out exactly how to use it. And everyone I've been speaking to is using it, you know, slightly different. When we first put it to market, we suggested people would use it as a pre-workout, you know, because that's whenever we take the rest of our vasodilators. The difference is when you take an oral vasodilator, it's got to get through the stomach and through the liver before whatever's left of those active ingredients get dispersed evenly through the body. So, and that can take up to 20 minutes, you know, half an hour. The Prototype 7, when you apply it directly to the location, it starts absorbing pretty much straight away. So what we found is if people use it directly pre-workout, and even Scotty Goble mentioned this to me, and I think he mentioned on RX Muscle Radio as well, that sometimes using it as a pre-workout, you get a pump so fast that it's almost inhibitory to your training. So what we started recommending people doing is doing their full set of exercises, warm up, get a really good session in on the arms, for example, and then just using it for that last 10 to 15 minutes or before your final, you know, drop set or superset, and then finishing off your exercise routine on that body part with a combination of exercises designed to just maximize the pump. And what was happening there is everyone was finishing off their session with a, just such a full-on insane pump. Now, the pump, the reason why we do the pump, it's not just for, you know, cosmetic purposes or to look vascular or whatever. It's actually to hold as much blood into the muscle as possible, because the other active ingredients in the Prototype 7, we want them to be taken directly to the muscle, which is their site of action, and held there for as long as possible. We don't just want them to be taken away and broken down by the liver and excreted. We want to hold them into the muscle. And with the Prototype 7, the other thing that can do is it can enhance glucose disposal into the muscle, so it can shuttle any carbs straight into the muscle. It can activate uncoupling proteins, which can have a very powerful thermogenic effect, so it shuttles fatty acids into the muscle to be used as fuel, and it also drags in the protein, the amino acids, and encourages protein synthesis. Some of the studies show protein synthesis of 10 to 20% enhanced by the active ingredients in Prototype 7. So when you're using it post-workout or towards the end of your workout, your post-workout nutrition becomes really important. So as opposed to just using it as you start training, do a good routine first on your arms, for example, and then for that last drop set, use the Prototype 7, totally blow out the muscle. And then it's really important to have that post-workout nutrition coming out. Well, it may be an intra-workout nutrition if you're doing a split routine. For example, if you're going to do arms and then shoulders, do your Prototype 7 on your arms for those last 10 minutes or so. Then have some aminos, carbs. The fat should be available because it'll be liberated from the local subcutaneous and intramuscular fat. And that'll drive those nutrients into those macronutrients into the actual muscle to be used for enhancing glycogen replenishment, protein synthesis, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you almost kind of stole my next question. I was going to ask, like, would it be best off if you're training two body parts to train your weaker body part actually second, when traditionally you train it first, but training it second might be more beneficial because you're having the nutrients when obviously you got the pump and you've used the Prototype 7 on that muscle. But you kind of came up with a better idea actually using aminos and stuff intra-workout.
Yeah. You just split it and then go on to the next body part and just repeat the process. Oh, yep. I tell you something really cool we worked out just recently with Mick Galley and George Saragus at that Get Motivated. I was doing a whole heap of research trying to work out exactly how it does the protein synthesis. And yep. What it does is it enhances the calcium influx into the muscles. The calcium influx into the muscle triggers, you know, glucose disposal, the fat burning, and the protein synthesis. It's also the catalyst that activates the satellite cells and everything to make new muscle. It's not actually the nitric oxide as part of the pump. It's actually the calcium influx that does that. So the Prototype 7 really enhances that calcium influx. But what we worked out is there's something you can actually physically do at the same time to amplify that effect again. So what we worked out is if you can get your muscles, when you're at that point of absolute pump, when they're as full and swollen as possible, what you want to do is then finish off. So if you've done your arms, just finish off with a big stretch, like a weighted stretch for 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Just hold those weights in your arms, get those biceps as stretched as possible, because with the combination of the Prototype 7, that massive pump, and then when you stretch it out, what it does is it actually makes the membranes more permeable, and you get this massive influx of calcium into the cells that mimics an injury, and then you get exaggerated growth. So remember, it's like the old school techniques, you know, like a lot of these things that kind of come in and out of fashion we've done and we didn't know why, you know. But once you get that massive pump and that massive swelling, if you can then just hold a stretch as long as possible, it'll burn and hurt like hell. But what we want to feel is those fascia, like almost like Velcro, kind of tearing a bit, you know. And it mimics an injury without actually triggering an injury, and then you get exaggerated healing. And then follow that up immediately with those aminos and carbs and nutrients.
Yeah, I've actually heard of, I remember reading about this once, whereas someone's theory where you basically do, they call it extreme stretching. I can't remember. You'd basically, you'd finish an exercise where it'd be in the stretch motion, and then you'd stretch for, I think, 40 seconds on a weight more than you can actually use. And I did that for a while, and gee, it really, really did hurt. And so that's actually, you think that's really beneficial to protein synthesis and hypertrophy?
And it combines with the protein. When you use it with the prototype 7, the combination of events is that the membranes of the cells become so permeable that the calcium just rushes in. And it's the calcium influx that actually activates all the growth factors and the satellite cells that triggers the hypertrophy.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Is there anything else you want to mention on Prototype 7, Matt, before we wrap it up?
Well, basically, the other question I get asked a lot about it, well, not so much a question, but the only thing that people can criticize about it is they don't understand actually how something you put on your skin can actually do anything other than make your skin shiny, And the analogy, the basic way I explain it to people is you would have seen yourself the testosterone creams and the progesterone creams and that sort of stuff that people have been using, for decades. We all know they work. Basically, anything that's got a molecular mass of between 100 and 800 can actually penetrate through the skin. The active ingredients in the ectosterones and the arginine, they're all around the same molecular weight as a testosterone and progesterone. They're a very similar particle size. So those things can automatically just slip straight through the skin. What's actually really cool about it is when you take something orally, a lot of it gets broken down. Or it's how do I explain it? Like, when you add a vasodilator to the bloodstream, it's like throwing petrol on a fire. As soon as it hits it, it's kind of used up. It's gone. But when you do something transdermally, things start absorbing straight away into the local area, but then it creates this gradual trickle where it's just gradually releasing those active ingredients. So it keeps those vasodilators in the local area for longer. So that's how you can get a longer lasting pump. And that's how you can also get a site specific pump. And the fact that these things naturally just are small enough particle size to penetrate through the skin. We use a couple of other penetration enhancers. But you don't need to use any sort of what they call rubefacients, which is a compounds that damage or irritate the skin or burn, like a Dankarab or those sort of things. You don't actually need anything like that because we use a very similar technology in the base as what they used in the testosterone and progesterone creams. And our active ingredient is pretty much the same size and shape as those other steroids. Yeah. And don't forget, one of the main active ingredients in the Prototype 7 isn't an ectosterone. It's a natural form of a sterone, similar to testosterone, progesterone, So they're the same type of molecule, very similar chemical structure. And the cool thing about those is they go in and they have very similar effects and the ability to build muscle and everything, but they don't have any of the actual hormonal side effects or actions.
That's awesome. And I've actually had one person say to me, I said, oh, do you think you get such a good pump, because it obviously heats the muscle up like a deep heat or something? And I was like, no. Like, I said, go put deep heat on your muscle and then train it, and then put Prototype 7 on it and train it, and you'll feel the difference, basically. So
You can feel it anyway. But we got plenty of sample pots around. So if you go into your local store and they don't have any sample pots, tell them to contact us and we'll send out some samples because it's one of those things you've got to feel it to believe it sort of thing.
Exactly.
I can release as much tech data as you want, but it's just try it and just see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
And it works straight away. Like, you don't have to load up on it or anything.
That's what I love.
Yeah. So people are doing Prototype 7 challenges now where they're getting people to just cover up and see how many push-ups they can do or see how many curls they can do and the pump happens that fast within a couple of sets.
I think it happens quicker. I'll actually put it on. I'll get to the gym, I'll put it on, go to the toilet, then go start warming up, and I'll feel it on my warm-up. It's pretty insane how quickly it actually does work and penetrates the skin. You'll probably feel it at its maximum, 5-10 minutes in, So it's an absolutely awesome product. And Matt, I want to thank you for coming on Aussie Muscle Radio once again for 2 Minutes with a Scientist. Everyone stay tuned. In 2 minutes, we'll be back with me and Mick Galley to wrap up the show.
Mass Nutrition is Australia's premier sports supplement provider, with over 13 stores Australia-wide, stocking everything from protein powders and pre-workout mixes to weightlifting accessories and gym apparel. Mass Nutrition covers all your fitness needs. Owned and operated independently by Australia's best bodybuilders, you know you're not only getting the best brands at the best prices, but you're getting truly expert advice as well. Fuel your fire at one of our Mass Nutrition retail outlets or shop online at massnutrition.com.au.
Here's to the athlete, the bodybuilder, the figure competitor, those who are committed, those who sacrifice, those who want to be different, the ones that get up an hour before they have to, that put their body on the line for their goals and are never, ever satisfied with close enough. You can ridicule them, but you can never ignore them, because they challenge the way people make them think about themselves. And while the masses try to confine them and dismiss them, at ATP we celebrate their achievements, their dedication, and why they improve the world. Visit us on Facebook or at www.atpscience.com.
My Muscle Chef is the perfect solution for anyone who doesn't want to spend hours cooking, cleaning, and doing groceries every week. You can now focus on your training, knowing your diet is taken care of. All you need to do is microwave and eat. To order, simply jump online at MyMuscleChef.com or call 1-300-364-993.
Editor-in-Chief of RX Muscle Australia, Xavier Wills, is an amateur bodybuilder who's won state titles and competed on the national level. He's been competing since the age of 16 and wants to bring his knowledge to you. Xavier offers full off-season and contest preparation plans at affordable prices to get you shredded and ready to hit the stage without sacrificing that hard-earned muscle. Xavier keeps in constant contact with his clients and offers text message support, weekly Skype or phone calls, and personalized assessments to keep you on track and get the results you desire. You can contact Xavier Wills on his official Facebook page by searching for his name. You can also find Xavier on rxmuscle.com.au, or you can send him an email at xavierwills@rxmuscle.com.au. Get in shape now. Contact Xavier Wills today.
Need that edge in your training to push past barriers, break PBs, and take the body you've been working so hard for to the next level? Well, look no further. Gripped Fitness, the brand that supports the industry and Australia's top athletes. Gripped has a complete range of lifting accessories and apparel designed to get you lifting more, while providing the needed support and aesthetics to take your body to the next level. Check them out at www.gripped.com.au. Get a grip.
Welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio. I'm joined not only by Michael Galley this week, but also by his better half, Laura Amber. Guys, how are you both doing?
I don't know if she's
very
better
well,
half,
thank you.
Buddy.
You got that right, thank you.
I think we're both a little bit stressed at the moment, Xavier, and we probably should be having a drink because we're moving overseas in about 12 hours, and we've had a hectic few days, mate, let me tell you. Trust me. I've moved interstate or whatever like that before, but moving overseas, that's a whole new ball game.
Mate, yeah, I remember you moved to Sydney, what was it, last year? So yeah, you've been moving around a bit.
Well, I've been on the Goldie for about 20 years, so I've moved to Sydney, and that didn't work out, came back, and now I'm moving to Koh Samui, so I think that will take off. But, man, talk about leave everything at the last minute, all the packing, and or just all these little things you forget about, like disconnecting your phone, your internet stuff, selling my car, getting rid of my furniture.
Which you sold today. I can't believe you sold your car today.
I sold my car. Yeah, how was it, Laura? Like, I was a bit sad to get rid of the car. The old Supra's dummy.
We took a selfie, didn't we?
Yeah, we took a selfie. The old Supra's dummy, a world of good over the last few years. And a guy a couple of weeks ago inquired about it because I had it on Gumtree. And he came down from the Sunshine Coast and he said he'd come down the day before I was leaving. So up until today, I was like, fuck, if he doesn't come, what am I going to do? Well, I'm just going to have to get rid of the car of the car wreckers. So, yeah, luckily he came down, bought the car, and now he's a happy owner of a nice little Supra.
Very nice. But, Laura, have you moved around much? Like, have you moved, like, interstate or anything like that, or have you always been from Gold Coast?
No, well, I was originally from England, so moved to Australia and always lived in Brisbane. Up until a couple of years ago, I moved to the Gold Coast.
So this is going to be your third country?
Yes.
Ah, very nice. But, I mean, what do you, like, you guys obviously a bit, you know, like, I suppose nervous about it. What's the one thing that you're probably, like, most nervous about, or, like, is it just, like, leaving family and friends, or?
I think, yeah, that's our major thing. and just basically leaving our lifestyle here. But, I mean, I think we're really excited to embark on a new lifestyle and new adventures over there.
Yeah, for sure. Mick, I had, I told a couple of people after you put it out on Facebook and stuff like that, and, like, I just, a couple of people, and they're people that have listened to the radio show and stuff, and, like, is he still going to be on the radio show? They don't ask anything else, they just worry about the radio show and that it's still going to run as normal, so. When I put my post up before, I just had to put on the end of it, yes, he will still be on Aussie Muscle Radio.
Oh, well, that's good to know, is it? We've obviously got something good going here, and like I've said to you previous, and in my post, mate, I'm just so happy. And Laura can back it up. I talk about it all the time. I'm just so happy that I can continue to do this because, you know, I love this industry. I love talking about, you know, what's going on. And I just love our general chit-chat, actually. It's like talking to a best mate once a week.
Yeah, and it's the thing is as well, like, I've got, like, a lot of mates, like, you know, from Tassie and stuff that you just don't get the chance to catch up with. You know, you don't get the chance to jump on the phone and talk to them all the time and stuff. And the thing is, like, we have scheduled, like, basically times when we catch up.
Yes. We have to talk every Monday.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's good.
We make it work.
Yeah, exactly. We make it work no matter what. If you've got PTs and I've got, you know, shit on as well. So we always make time for it, which is good. Yeah.
In a car, anywhere, at a shop, we do it.
Yeah, exactly. But, mate, I had a bit of an interesting weekend. I said to you this before the radio show. I said I got drunk on my weekend, and you said, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So, I was shocked.
Yeah, it was a little bit. I thought, like, you know, I haven't had it. Oh, I've had a drink since the comp, but not really, you know, haven't really had a drink. And I haven't probably got drunk in like a year and a half or something.
Lightweight.
So, yeah, I was a little bit, I wasn't too bad, actually. Like, I thought I was when I was drinking. Because Holly and I just had a few people around. And it was actually, you know, just another couple, basically, and who we're mates with. So we had a bit of a barbecue and stuff like that and just had some drinks and, you know, listened to music and all that stuff. And, yeah, and I did my first couple of drinks, and I had vodka, and I was mixing that with some other stuff, which kind of really killed the taste of vodka, so it just didn't even taste alcoholic. And then Holly started doing my drinks. So she's kind of seen me, happy drunk before, but not bad. So she was doing double shots in there and stuff like that. So the next morning when I woke up, I was thinking, geez, I was a bit drunk, actually. And actually, she's like, well, you drank about two-thirds of a bottle of vodka. And I was like,
there you go.
That'll do it. but you know what? She kind of bagged me about that. And then it was probably, I don't know what time it was, but it was kind of like they were there at our house for a fair while. And I was like, oh, you know, we better get going soon. She's like, where's Holly? Where's Holly been? And I'm just like, I don't know. Because we was just outside and we was just talking. I just kind of forgot that Holly wasn't there. Yeah. And she's like, is she in the toilet or is she gone to sleep or something? I'm like, oh, she wouldn't have gone to sleep. I walk into our bedroom and I just see, and I'm just, Holly's just laid out on the bed just sleeping. I couldn't believe it, mate. It was just, she probably wouldn't like me telling this on the radio show, but she never listens to them, and she's at the gym at the moment, so I'm not going to get in trouble. Yeah.
You didn't do anything stupid now, did you?
No, I don't think so. No. I can remember it. I wasn't that bad. Yeah. But, yeah, jeez. I'm not one of those people that's like a sad drunk. I'm just a happy drunk that just talks.
Well, I'm either happy or aggressive. It's one or the two.
It's a bit of a hit or miss.
Yeah, it's hit or miss these days. I think as I'm getting older, my brain's clicking more. But when you and Holly come over and visit us in Koh Samui, we'll have to have 50 cent freaking vodka and
Long Island
ICs.
Oh, mate, Holly, she will be... she is a genuine lightweight. She held her own the other night, but yeah, she... Yeah, yeah, nah. Jeez. Yeah. She's gonna be gone, trust me. I look forward to coming over visiting you guys and actually seeing Thailand, because I've only ever been, the only place I've been to out of Australia is Hawaii, so I'm looking forward to going to Thailand. I've always kind of wanted to go, but it's just never
Like you said, it's closer for you to come and visit me in Thailand than it is here.
It's literally, you know, I think it's like the flights return are like between about 350 and 400 from WA.
What is that?
Yeah, it's nothing. It's it's literally cheaper than going to Queensland for me. So.
Yeah, it's so cheap.
I'll be offended if you don't come and visit us.
No. Holly will be offended. Trust me. She's been on to me about it. She's like, this is the thing about Holly. She will get it in her mind that she wants to do something, and she'll be texting me from work and be texting me while I'm trying to do work in the day, saying, "Let's do it this time. Let's do it. Like, basically, let's book it now." I'm just like, "No, just chill out. We'll talk about it tonight." And then it kind of gets forgotten. So. It will happen. I'll get pressured into it soon.
Oh, it'll happen. We'll all be pressuring you.
Yeah, exactly. But let's talk a bit of bodybuilding stuff. We actually had a post put up in the week, which I think was a good idea because there's a lot of people talking about the Arnold Classic Australia next year, which is going to be held in March. And a lot of people saying, oh, you know, how do you qualify? How do you do it? You know, are you able to do it? Do you have to have done it the year before? All this stuff. So people were confused on if they were able to compete or not. So they put up a post, Tony Doherty did throughout the week, and he said, basically, to be a competitor in the first ever Arnold Amateur Australia, he said, look out for this logo, which is the Arnold Classic Australia logo, on our IFB contest posters. Just participating in an Arnold Classic Australia qualifier guarantees that you can compete in 2015 at the first ever Arnold Classic. So I said from the 1st of July in 2014, all IFB shows in Australia will have this logo, so look out for it. Spread the word and be a part of history. So at state and national shows, so you know, obviously the late shows this year, and I'm not too sure what ones will be actually held before the Arnold Classic Australia. So hopefully, like, you know, for people in WA, the Omara Classic will be on before the Arnold Classic Australia and things like that. And maybe even the Australasians will be on, or the All-Female Classic as well, before that. So it's, we'll have to wait and see when those shows will be kind of locked in and stuff. But yeah, basically, you know, you don't have to place top three. You can just compete in one of these shows, which I think is really good because otherwise it just becomes a nightmare with, like, booking, you know, flights and accommodation and all that stuff.
Yeah, so that, okay, yeah, that's interesting then. I hadn't actually seen too much of that.
Yeah, yeah, it was only put up a few days ago, so...
Yeah.
You've probably been too busy moving all your stuff and that, but I think
I said this to Laura before. I said I have honestly been that busy in the last say 4 or 5 days. I wouldn't have the faintest what's been going on in bodybuilding circles at the moment. I might see a little thing on Facebook here or there, but I haven't had a chance to really get on any of the forums, and I sort of feel bad because, you know, I've come to the table with nothing tonight.
Mate, you're lucky that I have. And
you're always good.
Yeah, yeah. No, but today we're gonna bring back a segment. What's it called? The greatest Olympians of all time.
Well, yeah. And I don't know how. I saw you mention, or this might have been you and Scott somewhere mentioned the 91 Olympia, and I thought, you know what? Well, that's one of them we didn't talk about it. And we did the controversial Olympias, but and we sort of scratched that and went to some of the most historic Olympias of all time. And I think 91 definitely stands out. I mean, that was Lee Haney's 8th Mr. Olympia, which then gave him the most Olympias of all time, beating Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
So, obviously, we'll touch on that a little bit tonight.
Definitely. And what was interesting as well, yeah, obviously, it was Lee Haney's 8th Olympia title, and he announced his retirement at that Mr. Olympia. But he was only, I think he's 28 or 29 years of age. Like, he was young. It's just unbelievable that, you know, most guys aren't pro at that age now, and probably the youngest competitor in the Olympia generally is around, you know, 28, 29. So he was retiring at that age.
Well, what was funny back then, though, Xavier, I remember in the 80s and possibly the early 90s, a lot of the top guys were turning pro. I mean, you've got to remember, Sean Ray turned pro at 21. Gaspari turned pro at 21. Librada was, Barry DeMay, with all these guys were very, very young, and they had successful long careers. I don't know what the hell was going on back then. Obviously, they weren't doing anything different. They just, some of these guys were genetic freaks. And like you said, Lee Haney retired at, you know, 28, 29. He could have went on to win. Now, I remember this is the point, I remember Scott made this point the other night, and this is why I wanted to talk about it. He probably would have won the 92 Olympia. Beating Yates there as well, but I think his reign would have been stopped in 93 where Yates just came out of just brought a physique that no one had ever seen before. But I mean, also of note too, and this was back in the day too, this was a big controversy thing. Do you remember Haney? Well, you probably don't remember, but you'd know it from reading sort of magazines and that now. Haney was a weeder boy for all those years, and then a few months out from the Olympia he switched to Twin Labs. And everyone said that was a bad move on his part. He can't win the Olympia, but he obviously went on to win the Olympia. And I think that really showed back then as well that it doesn't really matter which company you're with. It's the best physique on the day.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a massive move for back then. That was obviously Steve Bleckman, who owns MD now. That was obviously his company, wasn't it?
It was back then, yeah. Twin Labs were actually quite big back then, mate. They were a huge company with a huge range of supplements. And I do remember using some of their stuff they had back in the day. They had one called Rip Fuel, but I remember when it had the actual legal ephedrine in it back in the day, and it was an awesome fat burn. Jeez, it worked well. But yeah, Haney did that only a few months out from the Olympia. Everyone thought it was suicide, but as history shows, He went on to win the 8th Olympia, and I thought he won it convincingly with his best ever condition. His trademark posing routine that he's used that music to for quite a few Olympias. It was definitely one of the most memorable Olympias I've seen.
Yeah, and the total prize money as well from the Olympia was $250,000, which I thought isn't actually too bad for back then, but like now we've got Phil Heath gets $250,000 for winning it, so the total prize money for the men's Mr. Olympia was $250,000 overall then. So
yeah.
It was interesting, it was only the top 10 got any money, and then after that basically no one did. But Lee Haney won $100,000 winning it, and Dorian Yates got $50,000 coming in second. Dorian made massive improvements from, you know, the 90 Olympia to the 91 and then to 92, then 93. He just kept on improving like crazy, didn't he? Like, yeah. Did you think Lee Haney kind of retired because he saw that, you know, he kind of wanted to end on top?
I think that would have been in the back of his mind somewhere, because up until then, the only other person that really rivaled Haney for sheer size was Mike Christian. But Mike Christian, he sort of lacked in the legs a bit. His upper body was humongous. His conditioning was good. Yates came on and really didn't lack any body parts and had that hard conditioning. Now, you remember at the 1999 Champions, which is now the New York Pro, Yates, that was his first pro show, and he came in second to Ben Azizza. And I remember he lost that purely on his back alone. So Yates went away to develop his back, and he came back even stronger at the 91 Night of Champions, won that, beating Shawnee Smith, really looked tremendous, and then went on to the 91 Olympia, where obviously he placed second again. I definitely think Haney would have been thinking, you know, this guy has got some, you know, enormous potential, more than anyone that had been around his era. So I'm sure that probably would have had a bit of a say in his retirement.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard to believe that Dorian Yates actually lost a contest on his back, considering he just improves it so much, you know, during those early years.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you look at his back coming into 92, especially 93, it was outstanding. It's one of the best backs anyone had ever seen up until then, like the hardest and the shape of it. And the rumours are, and I mean, this is, you know, what you hear in his seminars, that after he was beaten by Mohamed Ben Azizza, he put up a photo of Mohamed's back on his fridge and in his gym and anywhere else around he could see it. And he just, that's all he looked at was that back. And he trained hard, and you could tell by the improvements he made by the 91 Night of Champions, the improvements in his back were pretty noticeable.
Yeah, exactly. In third, we had Vince Taylor, who I actually had on the radio show just a few weeks ago. Vince was one of the guys that he kind of, you know, he could have kept competing in the Olympia for years after this and, you know, done the Open Olympia and done quite well. Do you think he would have been able to maintain kind of like that top five if he hadn't have done the Masters Olympia?
It's hard to say, mate. Maybe in his first few Olympias. It's hard to say too, because like he said, he did what needed to be done to win those Masters Olympia. Now, if he was in the Open Mr. Olympia, he would have needed to do a lot more than what he was currently doing for those Masters. He definitely had the genetics to do it. He had the structure. He had, you know, he had the conditioning. So possibly he could have stayed in that top five if he had trained what needed to be done, you know, in the Open. Look, you know, because he's compared it to the Masters. He basically said he didn't train as hard or died as hard. I guess if that's how you read into it.
Yeah.
But I remember Vince coming into here, and this was the first year he used that awesome Terminator routine. And he bagged third place, looking incredible. He went on after that in 92. That's where he won the 92 Arnold Classic and the Ironman, and that was some of the best conditioning I've ever seen to date either. That was amazing. This was really the start. I think Vince came on hard in 89, had a rough year in 1990, but from 91, for quite a few years, he was dominant in all those shows like the Ironman, the New York, the Night of Champions, all those comps. He was really dominant.
Yep. Then we had Lee Labrada and Sean Ray placing in fourth and fifth. How old was Sean Ray at this one, firstly? Do you know, was this his first or second Olympia?
No, his first Olympia was 88. By his standards, he thought he was chucked in it. He went into it too fast. He came about 13th. 89, he took off. 1990, he got third. So this was a backward step for Sean, yeah, because 1990, he came on strong third. Case could have been made where he possibly could have won it, because that was the year it was drug tested, and Lee Haney was nowhere near his best. Lee Labrada got second that year, Sean Ray third. So he's gone backwards here, and he's gone backwards hard, down to fifth place. Now, Sean would have been 21, would have been about 25 here.
Yeah, so, still very, very young. Lee Labrada's a guy who kind of was like, you know, the kind of like the white dude with athletics back then, you know what I mean? Because he had Dorian Yates obviously placing ahead of him, and he wasn't... Dorian's athletics were actually quite good then, but he was the guy that was up there that was really quite aesthetically pleasing and kind of compared, I suppose, you'd say compared well with Sean.
Oh, absolutely. The only... It was funny, up until, I think it might... No, not the year after. It wasn't until 93 that Ray actually finally beat Labrada. They had a big rivalry going on between them for years in the Olympia, and Sean could never beat him until that 93 show. Labrada was very, very consistent, always placing second, third, fourth, around those numbers, always. He brought the same trademark conditioning here. His posing is second to none. Anyone who's seen his routines, he just blows people away with his routines. There's nothing like that these days. You know, people always said he could have been bigger, but you know what? He got away with his size. He got away with his shape and conditioning. He was beating guys outweighing him by sometimes 100 pounds, which I'm sure they hated.
Yeah, exactly. So he obviously, you know, they were fourth and fifth. And outside of that, we had Australian Sonny Smith, who placed sixth. This is one of... Was this his best placing or one of his best placings in the Olympia?
I'd hate to get this wrong because Tony Doherty will smash me, but I'm pretty sure this was Sonny's first Olympia. Now, I'm just backtracking what I remember. He came in 1990, because this was where Yates was too. Well, Yates got second, Sonny Smith got sixth. Now, 91, that's where Sonny came out of the... He blasted out of there. He got second. Now, he's gone in this Olympia coming sixth, and I remember he posed a Thunderstruck had just come out from ACDC. And this was the first time he'd used it, and he used it in quite a few Olympics after it. But in my mind, I believe this was Sonny's best conditioning. His skin... If you see the video, or if it's on DVD now, of the 1991 Olympia, the DVD, the picture quality of this was awesome, and you could really see Shawnee's conditioning it was so tight. Like, he had striations everywhere. He looked fantastic. There could have been an argument for him placing maybe in fifth over Sean, because I still feel Sean was a little bit watery compared to what he was. But, mate, Sonny looked amazing, and this was the start of Sonny's career as well.
Yeah, I'm just looking through his results at the Olympia. In 91, he got 6th. In 92, he got 7th. In 93, he got 8th. So he's going down one spot each year. In 94, he got 10th. In 95, he got 13th. So he kind of slowly declined a little bit. And then he went on and did the Masters. 96, got 2nd. In 97, he got 2nd in the Masters Olympia. And in 99, he got 3rd in the Masters Olympia.
Yeah.
So... That's according to his website anyway, so...
He had a big career, and he, like Milos, he did a lot of shows, mate, back in the day. Him and Milos were very close, and I know they used to room together way, way early on. It might have been around the 1990-91 part, and there were some funny stories of them just having two or three fridges in their unit in LA, you know, right in Venice Beach, and they'd just be stacked with food. And I mean, you love hearing stuff like that, how the guys were so close. They used to train together, they used to live together, you know, they just hung out. It was cool.
Yeah, no one seems to be like that anymore, do they?
We'll talk about that later, but did you see the big uproar on Facebook lately?
What's that about? Oh,
Adam and all that.
Just, yes, I've seen that. Yes,
yeah, that was going nuts. But anyway, yeah,
that's the opposite of it.
That just made me think of how it's just a little bit different nowadays. You know, there's no sort of But anyway, So Sonny comes six.
Yeah, then we had Francis Benfardo, who actually made his comeback at the Australian Pro on the Gold Coast, which was in 97, I think it was.
Yeah. No, it was 2000.
Oh, not 97, 2007, I meant to say.
2007, yeah. I was there for that one. Obviously. But, mate, Francis looked... He obviously come in seventh. Francis, he's got a very, very light bone structure. Like, most people wouldn't understand, he only weighs around 185, 190 pounds. But his arms and shoulders are just so big. He looks massive. He placed sixth in 1990 at the drug test at Olympia. And looked fantastic, you know, looked unreal. Then he's got seventh here. I'm pretty sure that he sort of slid down the placings a fair bit after 91. But a very aesthetic physique, no real weak points. His legs were maybe a tad thin, but they were very, very hard.
Yeah. He had a very big rib cage from just looking at him. Like, he really kind of opened up when he posed, like when he did a front double and stuff like that. He had just that very big kind of old school physique with the rib cage and stuff.
Yeah, master poser too. He could, you know.
Yeah, very, very good poser. In eighth place, we had... Oh, geez, I don't want to butcher his name, Mick.
Terry Pastel,
yeah. I was never going to get that one. I was just looking at it.
And... I finally got a name right.
Yeah. Well, we don't know yet. We'll have to have that confirmed.
I remember Terry Pastel back in the day. You know, Terry Pastel, he was about 5'3".
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was so tiny, but his arms were like 21 inches.
Because I was looking at pictures of this guy, and I was thinking, how did this guy place higher? Like, I couldn't find any really good comparison pictures. Yeah. So I was looking at individual pictures and thinking, this guy looks awesome. He's got real big legs, his arms are huge, and
yeah.
I was kind of thinking, this guy should place higher. He looks almost a little bit like, you know, Serge Gnabry, but bigger or something. But, yeah. Yeah, obviously, you know, 5 foot three, then, yeah, you're going to have to kind of look like that to place in the top 10 in the Olympia.
Yeah, though, I mean, he had quite a few good places over the years in the Olympia. He placed, he's placed around eighth or ninth a few times, which is quite impressive for someone his height. But he didn't lack anything at all either. His arms were humongous. His abs are really, really, really well defined. And Serge Gnabry was a big influence in his career as well, I remember him saying. But he actually has won a few pro shows, Terry, just like the couple of European Grand Prix and stuff like that.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me by looking at his physique either. But in ninth place, we had, Jesus, I'm going to butcher this one too.
Achim Albrecht.
Oh, Jesus. I'm embarrassed
I know,
now.
I'm back in the day.
I'm embarrassed now you're getting these names right. But I've got a bit of info on this guy. He's around 28 years old in this contest. So he was obviously, you know, another young one as well. But he did you know he went to the WWF?
Yeah, I do.
Yes.
Yep.
And he's originally named, his name in WWF when he's first introduced was Argo, and then he went on to be called, named Brachus. I mean, it wasn't Brachus. So, yeah, he kind of went under two names, but yeah, apparently he trained with Mark Henry and The Rock and stuff like that. So he's under contract for a couple of years, but I think it was 98 or 99, he actually, had to retire from, you know, trying to get another contract with WWF and, that, but just because he had too many injuries and stuff, so he had to, I suppose, retire. Yeah. But, yeah, it's pretty interesting that, you know, he went on to actually be, you know, pretty successful within that field because he had, I think, a two-year contract with WWF and, yeah, did well.
Yeah, he, because he didn't really do that well. I mean, he came on strong. He won the World Amateur Championships, I'm pretty sure, in 1990, or could have been 91, which then qualified for the Olympia. He was sort of touted as the next big thing. No, I think everyone expected him to. Well, people were sort of saying, you know, the next Mr. Olympia, this and that. Obviously, that didn't come off. This was the highest he placed in the Olympia. I think he may have only done one other Olympia and he didn't place at all. And he sort of, I think he may have went on to the Arnold Classic the year after, 92. I think he came fourth or fifth.
Yeah, yeah. And just his aesthetics weren't as good as a lot of these other guys back then as well, I think. So that probably hurt him a bit, I think.
Yeah, exactly. He was very, very wide. He had humongous shoulders and big legs, but his arms were very, very subpar for a pro, which is really, it really hurt him a lot with his front double bicep and his back double bicep and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. In 10th, this is kind of a shocking one when I looked at the list. I didn't know this, but Rich Gaspari placed in 10th.
Yes, this was a, Gaspari started going down at around 80, well, he finished up his last runner-up was 88, 89, he dropped, 1990, he dropped again, and then finally 91, he dropped to 10th, which was, for me, I was a huge Gaspari fan back in the day, so it was a bit upsetting to see, and you could see the toll of all those years of hard, hard training, you know, it was really starting to catch up with him, torn certain body parts, just wasn't bringing that same conditioning, but also I think the depth of the competitors they were starting to get in that era, Vince Taylor, Dorian Yates, you know, Sean Ray was starting to really show his potential, Shawnee Smith, they were all sort of bringing their A games massively, mate, and you could see the difference in bones, in structures and physiques, and it was almost like they were phasing certain physiques out and then the other ones were coming in, which is what happens, mate. It all goes, you know, full circle eventually, but he did go on to compete for a few more years, but he just didn't. This was pretty much it for him.
He couldn't get back to kind of where he's at, I guess.
Nah. In my mind, it started going after. It's almost like he won the 89 Arnold Classic, and then after that, by the time he got to the Olympia, he just seemed like he was burnt out, and he just never recovered from it, mate. That's when injuries started happening, and it was one of those things where me as a fan. Every comp, I was just waiting on to see how Gaspari went, or every Olympia, I was like, fuck, I hope he's back up there, but he just kept going down.
So, yeah. And this, like, what I found interesting about this contest as well, is it had probably about 25-odd competitors in it, and you know how they obviously changed the rules for the Olympia, where you have to win a show, or you have to qualify via points, because they said they want lineups like it was, you know, like it used to be, Obviously, I didn't mean, you know, lineups like, you know, smaller lineups like back here, because these lineups are as big as they kind of were when they were saying there's too many in the Olympia. So I found that interesting that there's a lot of guys in this show.
Yeah, well, I think it was top 10 from every Olympia qualifier back then.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm sure it was the top 10, then it changed to top 6, and then obviously how it is the current system. Mate, I'll double-check that, but I'm 100% sure. Maybe ask TD, but I'm pretty sure it was top 10 qualified at every Olympia up until mid-90s, maybe late-90s, but I'll check on that.
Jeez, that's massive. There's a few guys that I did a little bit of research on because I hadn't seen these guys in one of our previous, you know, previews or anything like that. But I'll just mention Ron Love placed 11th, Bob Parris placed 12th, Robbie Robertson, who's still kicking around and still training hard, is placed 13th. And we had a guy called, I'm going to butcher this name too, but it's Renel Janvier.
Oh, Renel Xavier, I think that's
Xavier. Everybody. Yeah, that makes sense.
And I mean, I'm not one to say anything because let's face it, I butcher everyone's name, even my best mate's Aaron Pilates. But I'm pretty sure it was, man, he's got a, I don't know how much you know about him, but he burst onto the scene with the most amazing glute hamstring. You need to Google a photo of him with his glutes and hammies. I've never, until this day, seen such the difference between the glute and the hamstring and the conditioning and the tie-ins. I've never seen anything in my life. He came on in 91 and got second to Sean Ray at the Arnold Classic. And everyone thought this guy was going to be huge news. Obviously, he didn't place here in the 91 Olympia, and then I really don't know what happened to him after that. But I'll never forget that second place at the 91 Arnold Classic against Sean Ray. He looked absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, it's funny that he got second at an Arnold, and no one actually, like, I'd never heard his guy's name.
No, man, up until when you said that just then, it just popped in my head. I just remember his physique, and yeah, it was a real different physique too. Like, his bicep peak was different than anything else I'd ever seen before. He had this tiny little waist. He had that real awesome black man genetics, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But far out, I'd like to know what happened to him after that. Actually, that's got to give me something to research.
Yeah, he competed, well, this is what I read on a forum anyway, so it's not like a set-in-stone piece of information, but apparently he competed in the 1988 World Championships in Brisbane.
You know what? You are right, and I remember that. That's right. 88 World Championships. Fuck yeah, that's a while back. Jesus.
Yeah, and he, I think Andreas, someone said on the forum, Andreas Munzer won the overall there.
Yeah, that's right. That is correct. I remember that being written somewhere as well.
And the same person as well said he was dating Laura Carell, who was obviously a female bodybuilder back then as well, and she was, like, obviously, you know, very well known. And
did you know that used to be Chris Aceto's woman?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, she was apparently dating him at that time as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we are all trivia experts tonight.
Yeah, I know. Well, I kind of, I have that little bit of extra time, so I was like, look up a few of these guys and
I like that.
Find out a bit more. But in the next place, in 15th, Nimrod King, which is probably the worst name I've ever heard in my life. He went on to do some promoting and stuff, but he had a great physique. His legs were just a little bit slide on, I think, for, you know,
Nimrod was huge. I think he won a pro show, and just in my head I'm thinking it was a Niagara Falls one year. He won that, I'm pretty sure. And he was bit, mate, he had a great physique. Like, he was huge, just didn't bring that extra conditioning. But his arms were massive, chest was huge. Excuse me.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We've got to keep that in the show.
Jeez, yeah, I'll keep that in the show.
He actually went on to be a promoter. He promoted the Toronto Pro one year, and from what I heard, he actually didn't pay the prize money.
I do remember that somewhere.
Yeah, because Darren Charles won the contest and was owed $10,000 prize money, which apparently he never got.
That's right, yeah. Now, wouldn't that suck if you were a competitor?
Oh, you'd be very much annoyed, because you're trying to cover costs at that point, really, aren't you?
Oh, hell, give me my money. Pay up. Yeah. Show me the money. Jerry Maguire, I watched that the other night.
Very nice. But in the rest of the lineup, like, you know, I don't know if you want to touch on any of these names. We've got Samir Banu, who was obviously a Mr. Olympia winner. These are all guys that placed equal 16th. So Samir Banu, Al Beckles, who was one of the oldest guys ever to do the Olympia, probably the oldest. I don't know this one. Jair Borgen Poulsen, never heard of him.
Oh, Jair, he won the Amateur World Championships in the light heavyweight division the year before, if I remember correctly. He was a big blonde, He actually had a pretty decent physique, just not the genetic caliber of some of the other top guys, but very wide shoulders, came in super grainy hard. I'm just trying to think. He did get third in a pro show, but I can't remember. It must have been the year after this comp.
Mick, you are good at this. I'm impressed. I thought you might go, I don't know who Jer is.
No, I remember Jer. Mate, you, how funny is it? Like, honestly, as I'm getting older, I honestly believe my memory is going to shit. But I remember stuff like this. That means you're getting it. That means Alzheimer's, doesn't it? If you remember.
Mate, I don't know. I don't know what it means, but you remember stuff back here, like these times much better than you remember stuff that's recently happened.
You'll tell me something last week and I'll forget it.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll try you on some of these other names. Joseph Dawson?
Joseph Dawson, he, same thing. He won the Amateur World Championships as well. Not the best physique, though. Very, very thick waist. Big arms. I remember that. Big arms. And he wasn't very, like, handsome.
Okay, next name. Frank Hillbrand?
Frank's still sort of on the scene. This is good. This is like trivia questions for me. He's actually, where is he? Overseas somewhere. He's still prepping some top guys. He claims to be a natural competitor, and he also came on the 1990 Drug Free Olympia and placed seventh, I believe, after Francis Benfato. And then after that, he didn't go too well. Obviously, 1990 here, he placed a bit lower. Awesome quads. Like, actually, fuck, you know what? I think Frank's dead.
Oh, really? So he's not still on the scene, man?
No, I just remember something on Get Big about how he was prepping some top guys, and then I thought, hang on, there was another thread where he died of a heart attack. Don't quote me. And Frank, if you're listening, well, if you're dead, you're not listening, but if you are alive and you are listening and I'm wrong, I'm very sorry. He had great quads, tiny little waist, good shoulders, but just, yeah, didn't have that overall thickness.
I just looked it up talking, man. Yeah. He's dead, yeah.
Oh, Jesus. I feel bad. Yeah, okay.
No, well, you weren't to know. You weren't to know. You kind of just remembered.
But I did know. Yeah, didn't I? But, oh, hang on a minute. He has died.
Yeah, he died when he was 45, so he wasn't very old. I don't know what happened.
Sorry, Frank.
It was an article by Lonnie Teeper where he talks about it.
Well, he was very good in his day. Especially at the drug test at Olympia, which makes you think, well, maybe he wasn't on much at all. After that, he didn't really amount to much, but excellent set of legs. Check out his legs one day.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture now. I found a picture from the side, of his legs from the side, and he's got massive hanging hamstrings. His quads look insane.
Yeah, and hard too, aren't they?
Yeah, he looks absolutely crazy. Then I know this guy, Pavel Jablonc.
Yes.
How do you say his last name? I don't even know how to say it.
Well, I think I'll butcher that too. Pavel Jokolokki.
Jeez, that was bad.
He only just really sort of... I actually don't think he's really retired. I think he'll do another show, Masters or whatever, but he's been competing... He competed in the 1988. That's when I first... I first saw a magazine cover of him in 88.
Yeah, he popped up every few years, doesn't he?
Yeah, did he do that? But he's had a massive career. He's done all the 90s. He was competing all of 2000s. As far as, like, overall fullness of, like, the shoulders and his arms and stuff like that and chest, he looked unreal. His conditioning was always freaky. I just think he just lacked that overall mass that a lot of the guys did.
Yeah, for sure. Now, the only other one I don't know on here is Tom Terwilliger.
How can you not know Tom? He was one of the greatest posers of all time.
Well, no, I've no idea. I've never heard of him.
Google him. He's really, really good poser. From what I can remember, he was like maybe a third-tier pro, like good sort of physique, but never really challenged any of the top positions in any of the comps he did. Just a very, very good poser.
So you expect me to know a third-tier pro from the early 90s?
No. No, this is why he got me on the show.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. But that's pretty much a wrap-up from that. We spent a lot of time on that, so we'll move on.
There's a lot to talk about with that one.
Yeah, I know. It's a good one. But we'll talk about a few things that are happening in current day in bodybuilding scene. We've got the 2014 Arnold Brazil this weekend, I believe it is, where it's going to be a fair battle, Mick, because we've got a lot of good names up there. And there's kind of... To me, there's probably about five, six names that are sticking out to me that could possibly win the show. Probably about five names, I reckon, that have potential to win it. But Mick, Scotty and I have talked about it already earlier in the show. Well, we haven't actually done the segment yet. We're doing this segment first, which is kind of a bit backwards. But we're going to already have previewed the show. But I want to get some predictions off you, because there's a lot of good names in here, and I'll just speak of a few of ones I've got in my top six. You got Juan Morel, who was previously prepped by Dave Palumbo, who apparently isn't this time around. We've got John De La Rosa coming off a second place to Justin Compton. We've got Steve Kuklo, who's kind of...
He looked good too, yeah. I saw a good photo of him the other day.
Yeah, and then we've got Ben Mikulski as well doing this show, which is kind of... He's kind of gone under the radar, which is surprising. And yep. We got Lionel Blakey, and we got William Bonack as well, who got second in Australia. So we've got a lot of impressive guys there. Now, I want to get a prediction off you, maybe a top five, top four, something like that, and I'll give mine as well.
Got those names. Man, after the photos we just saw of Lionel, he's looking good. He's looking real good. He's definitely going to be... Well, we all said he came in his best ever, like, not the Olympia, but the couple of shows before, he came in his best ever. I think he'll be better than that. He looked crisper, he looked rounder, his waist looked tighter. We both agreed on that. I think first is going to be a battle between him and Bonnet.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Do you want me to give my top six first?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay, I'll go. I would have already said this earlier in my radio show, but I've got Juan Morel in sixth. I've got John De La Rosa in fifth. I've got Steve Kuklo in fourth. I've got Ben Pekulski in third. Lionel Blakey in second. And William Bonack in first place.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's a tough... I'm going to probably go with William in first too, only because everyone's going to be watching for him when he gets to this show. He's going to be the man. I reckon they're sort of touting him as the man to beat after his second place at the Australian Grand Prix. And you see the photos of him now. He looks hard, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's ridiculous. In person, he is just...
Yeah,
off his head.
I'm going to stick with him first. I'm going to put Lionel in second. I'm going to put Kluko in third, though. I don't think he's going to bounce back just yet.
Yeah.
So I will put Ben in fourth, though. I'll put De La Rosa in fifth. And who was the other guy? Sorry.
Juan Morel, maybe, or Fred Smalls. Got him.
I'll put Marmarell. I won't put Fred Smalls in there.
No. Yep. No, yep. That's good predictions, right. Mate. Good predictions. I can't wait for the show because...
What happened to our betting stuff? Our picking of comps?
Oh, mate, I got fucking lazy. Because we fell for it at the Australian one, so...
I just remembered that. We've only done one.
Yeah, I know. Well, the second one would have been the Australian one, which we all would have picked Sean Roden because he was the obvious one, but... Maybe I'll do up some odds actually before the radio show goes up, and then I'll let you and Scotty pick. So
I'll be travelling to Thailand, mate. I'll be on a plane.
Oh shit!
Exactly.
Well, I'll just put you down for Bonack then.
Okay, yeah, Bonack.
I'm excited for this show. It's going to be absolutely massive, and
Justin's definitely not doing it, is he?
As far as I know, he's not. No, he's not on the official list, which is on the website, which seems insane to me because I think he'd probably almost be the favourite. It'd be him between him, Bonack, and Baiki. That would add kind of another element to it.
Yeah, I don't understand why he's chose to sit this one out.
I don't know. Maybe he's just trying to ride the momentum and, maybe he's like thinks if I come in and get if I lose at this one, then it'll lose the hype or the anticipation for him at the Olympia, So maybe he's kind of thinking in terms of contracts and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, possible.
But if he was to win it, then it'd just build the hype even further, so.
Yeah.
But, I'm very excited for that. But we saw a picture of, I saw a picture of Mike Kefalianos 7 days out, and he's in condition as always. So I'm looking forward to seeing him in the show, the Aussie Greek as well. But Cedric McMillan, Mick. Now, this guy he's looking the biggest he's ever looked in off-season scenario. He's way bigger than he's been in the past. And, I mean, like, we've never seen this from Cedric before, and it seems like Cedric's maybe, taken time off, or he's, been distracted in his off-season, or he's had... once he had a bit of a family tragedy type thing happen, and he hasn't been able to put together a really good contest and then a good off season. But he's done that. Like at the Olympia, he was about 12th place, but he was much improved from the New York Pro that he competed at before the Olympia, much improved. And then he went on 6 months later, competed in the Arnold Classic this year, looked absolutely sensational, added way more muscle, looked heaps better again. And now he's looking insane in his off-season, which we didn't really even see the year before that. We didn't see that before the Olympia or anything. We didn't see him looking big. But now he's looking huge. So do you think he's going to be able to reach his potential this year, working with Chris Aceto, and coming off an off-season where he actually is massive?
I think without a doubt we're going to see the best Cedric what the Olympia, without a shadow. I've never seen him look this good in the off season. I don't think he's ever taken this off any off season that serious, to be honest with you. The photo we saw when he was standing next to Fouad, remember that, with the most muscular? He blew Fouad out of the water, not only in size and shape, but just the hardness of his physique. Cedric, I think, honestly, who knows where he's going to place in the Olympia. If he comes in 100% on, he could really shake it up.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this is going to be a breakout year. I think he's literally going to get him in the Olympia, and he is going to just shake shit up. He's going to be up there with the Dennis Wolfs, up there with maybe the Justin Comptons, if he's up there, the Big Ramis, the Kai Greens and stuff like that. So I think he's going to be somewhere in that, I think, that top five. So
yeah,
I'm excited to see it. But one more news story before we head off. Amit Sapir is a guy that has kind of been in the 212 and 202 class, and he's kind of been overlooked a lot of the time. Like, he's placed quite well, and he might have even been close to winning a show or winning one. And he's competed in the Olympia, and he's just been on the outside of that top group. He's been outside of, you know, the Dave Henry type group, the Jose Raymond type group, where, you know, they're the top five, top six guys in the class battling. He's just been outside there for a few years now. And he's been working with John Meadows, who has, what's the radio show's name? Blue Collar Muscle Radio on RX Muscle. And, I mean, since he's been working with John Meadows, he's added, I think it's 20 pounds in the past year. And in the same condition as well, the same amount of weeks out, because he's 3 weeks out now and 222 pounds. So it seems like he's going to go from being, you know, a light 212 competitor to being, you know, one of the heaviest, you know, just maxing out the class. I mean, Mick, do you think he's going to shock people in the 212 this year?
Yeah, well, that picture you sent through before, he looked insane. If he brings that conditioning right, that upper body, like, his legs look nuts too, but that upper body, the chest, the shoulders and arms, that was so thickly dense, packed with muscle, and he still looks like he was the front double bicep, the picture we saw. His waist still looked pretty tight in it.
He's
definitely going to do some damage.
Yeah, and it seems like anyone that works with John Meadows seems to bring in just an awesome physique. So I think he's going to be one of those guys to watch out for, and he's going to be a guy that's jumping into that top group of the 212s this year. So I'm excited to see that. And
interesting times ahead, isn't it? The 212s and the Opens with some new guys coming in.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of wondering if we'd see the stories come out this year. And a lot, you know, there's a few good ones. Last year you had Rami and you had the Jay Cutler thing. And, you know, there's a lot of good stories. I'm like, you know, I was thinking this year probably isn't going to live up to it, but... You know, it's the start of the year, and we've had, you know, the Cedric, we've had the Justin Compton thing, we've had, you know, all that stuff going on, the Bonac, the, you know, yeah, now Mix up here, and what Flex Lewis is going to do, if he's going to jump out of the, you know, the open class and jump out of the 212 class and do open. So I think it's been exciting, and I think there's going to be probably a lot more stories to come when the other shows roll around. So. Yeah, I'm very, very excited for that, to see if there's another big Rami that comes out of a work or something like that. But, Mick, that's pretty much it for this radio show. And when this radio show goes up, you're going to be in Thailand. So.
Yeah, weird. Excited. And then the next show, we'll be recording from Koh Samui.
Exactly. Where will we be recording from? Like, the store?
It'll either be in the shop or back at my hotel.
Very nice. Excited for that. Excited. You'll have to give us an update on how it all is and
what the tubes are like and all that
stuff.
I'll be inboxing you all the time, mate.
Excellent. Look forward to it, mate. Now, that is it. Do you have any shout-outs of the week or anything like that?
No, I should just shout out to all my close mates that have, you know, I've caught up with Craig and Logan, Aaron and Luke and all the boys, mate. All good mates. I'm going to miss them tremendously. And luckily for things like social media, like Facebook and stuff like that, when we can all stay in touch and we can all see what each other's doing. But, yeah, it's going to be tough leaving the crew here on the coast, mate.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm sure I'll be coming over for holidays and stuff like that. And I actually saw Aaron Pilates's mum's salon burnt down. Did you see that?
Yeah, it did, unfortunately. It burnt down the other day. So luckily she's fully insured, and they're doing everything they can to get it up and running as soon as possible, mate.
Yeah.
So,
little shout out there to Aaron Pilates and his mum and her salon and all that stuff. But yeah, I think we probably had Aaron Pilates on this show, I think, because I talked to him last week and he said he was... He said it on Tuesday, which is the day we actually put up the show. He said he'll be able to do an interview then. So people might have already heard from him, and we might have already talked about that. So probably just rehashing old news. But Mick, good luck in Thailand. I'm excited for you, and excited for you, Laura, as well, if you're still there.
Thank you.
No worries.
She's and, sleeping next to me.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry I had to sit through that whole thing of us talking about old Olympias and stuff like that.
It but, was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess so.
For some people.
Yeah.
But that is it for another episode of Aussie Muscle Radio. I want to thank our sponsors, Gripped Fitness Accessories, ATP Science, My Muscle Chef. Their orders close Tuesday night at midnight. And we have 2 Minutes with a Scientist back, which is on this episode as well, which is great as well. I got to speak to Matt during the week.
Actually, Matt was just over my house with his little baby, Alfie.
He's so cute.
Yeah, I was talking to him about his kids and his kid. When he was on a radio show, so it wasn't on a radio show, it was off a radio show, but yeah, it sounds like it's very interesting and stuff, and yes. I was talking to him about it, just getting worried about, you know, when I have kids and stuff like that, so a bit of a wake-up call, but Mick, that is it for another episode. For Michael Galley, Xavier Wills, and of course Laura as well, that is it for this episode, and remember, with Aussie Muscle Radio, the truth hurts.
Aussie Muscle Radio is a presentation of RX Muscle Australia, the truth in Australian bodybuilding. Visit rxmuscle.com.au for all the latest bodybuilding news, videos, contest coverage, and so much more. Tune in next week at this same time for another round with Xavier Wills and Scott Goble, only on Aussie Muscle Radio.